Hello, New Genners. This is Max Moon. Max Moon. You know me from the first episode of Monday Night Raw and my memorable 56-second run in the 1993 Royal Rumble. I just wanted to share some exciting news with you. Chikara is returning to the UK in May for their Anniversario Tour. It's May 27th in Birmingham, May 28th in Manchester, May 29th in Newcastle, and May 30th in Glasgow. The fun-filled Lucha Super Party is coming to Great Britain and the country where Glasgow is, and you're invited.
Hello, and welcome to episode 54 of the New Generation Project podcast, where, no word of a lie, we're actually going to talk about a World Wrestling Federation pay-per-view.
Oh my God.
After dipping our toes into 1997, it's time to dive in headfirst with this year's edition of the Royal Rumble. My name is Stuart Brooks, and I'm joined today by our very own Tickle Me Paul Scrivens.
No, we're not.
And Fondle Me Adam Wykes.
Hello.
How are you doing?
Not too bad, actually. Yeah. Bit cold, but apart from that, it's all right.
It's a lovely snowy morning here in Leicestershire.
Yeah.
Heavy snow.
Yes. We drove back from London last night in somewhat of a blizzard, which was very interesting when you're going at 60 miles an hour and like snow's coming towards you.
I think it's a lovely feeling. Not that I was in the car with you, but I have driven in heavy snow before.
Perhaps if we'd have had some Christmas music on, but it was January, so it's probably not appropriate.
I don't know.
Paul, how are you?
Yeah, good thanks. Good thanks yourself.
Yeah, not too bad. Enjoy the cricket yesterday?
I've loved the cricket recently. So since the last time we recorded, we've had two major feats of cricketing prowess from England players. So Ben Stokes in the second test against South Africa, scoring, I think, 258. But the speed at which he scored them was fantastic. The fastest 250 in test cricket history.
Wow.
I believe in the fastest double century by an Englishman, second fastest double century by anyone in test cricket, but just blew the opposition away. So if you imagine kind of Brock Lesnar suplexing everyone in sight multiple times, it was kind of cricket's equivalent to that.
But you didn't find that entertaining?
No, but it's different in cricket.
Okay.
Because I'm a real kind of big England fan, and I'm not a Brock Lesnar fan, but I'm probably more of an England fan than I am a Brock Lesnar.
You're more of a fan of the England cricket team than you are of Brock Lesnar.
Okay. Yeah, put it that way. And then yesterday, as we're recording on Sunday, Stuart Broad took 6 wickets, but he took, in a single spell, 5 for 1.
That's incredible, really, isn't it?
It is incredible.
It's better than your odds.
Yeah.
So he has surpassed your bowling records.
No, it's not as good as your overall odds. Didn't you get, like, 8 for...
15.
Yeah, there you go.
But he equaled that, but 7 of mine were bowled, so he decided that mine was better.
Oh, okay.
Oh, sorry, yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah. But I have taken 4 for naught before in a single spell.
So wow. He's got that to aspire to.
Yeah, well, I think he did, like, if you cut it, because he took his first wicket, then conceded his run. I was playing in a match, though, where bowler took 8 for 1, but that one was a dropped catch.
Right.
Wow.
Not by me, by the way.
Were you not the bowler either?
No, I wasn't the bowler. Stuart, what have you been up to recently?
I've written stuff for Calling Spots, and I've watched a lot of wrestling, and I went to see AJ Styles versus Rey Mysterio in Sheffield for 5-star wrestling.
Ooh, very good.
Was it 5-star?
No, it was 2.5, but I don't think that's as good of a company name as 5-star wrestling, probably.
Okay.
But it was an enjoyable show. Yeah, mostly families there to see Rey, I imagine. And you had a bunch of kind of UK guys on the undercard who, the majority of the crowd weren't particularly familiar with them. So full credit to Will Ospreay, Marty Scurll and Jimmy Havoc, who had a triple threat where, when they came out, a good percentage of the audience were not interested and didn't know who they were. But by the end of it, they were really into it. And the credit to those three guys for that.
Yeah.
But it was a decent enough show.
Sorry, how was Rey?
Rey, the thing is, like... Because
he's knocking on a bit, isn't he?
Yeah.
Multiple injuries and...
Yeah, you kind of couldn't go into the match expecting you were going to be watching 1996 Rey Mysterio.
Yeah,
If you were going into it expecting that, you were going to be disappointed. But if it is the only time AJ Styles and Rey Mysterio have a match, I was glad to see it live.
Yeah?
Mm. Yeah. He still looks graceful when he's in the air and stuff, but his movements are a lot slower and stuff.
Yeah, understandable.
And then yesterday went to London for Revolution Pro High Stakes 2016.
Front row.
So first time ever front row at a wrestling show.
What was that like?
Which was really cool. Yeah. Weird up close. very loud. Like, the ring is very, very loud when you're that close to it.
Did it kind of make you appreciate the massively inflated prices of front row seats? Is it that much better?
Well, it was £50 for front row, which, when you pay £30 for the balcony, it's really not too bad. I mean, that five-star show, I think they were charging like £150 for front row.
Wow.
But the front row on our side was empty. So that tells you, you know, what your value for money is there.
Well, if you're also going, if it's families that are going to that,
yeah,
then £150 a seat is then
a lot.
Yeah, for a family, yeah.
Depends how big your family is.
Eight. Well, if it's a big family, then it's an awful lot. It'd be 8 times 150.
But yeah, RevPro, as ever, absolutely fantastic. Marty Scurll and Will Ospreay, again, just had a 30-minute absolute stormer. It should be up on demand by the time we release this episode. So rpwondemand.com, go watch it. It's a really great match. Pete Dunne and Flash Morgan Webster, who we saw at Southside, both made their, as far as I'm aware, kind of York Hall debuts.
Yep.
And for two guys who hadn't been there before, they did really well. And it's a lot kind of like the PWG environment, I think, in that the crowd are into pretty much everything.
Okay, good.
Now, that may be down to the fact that what they book is all very good, but generally there's not a match that just gets sandbagged by the audience.
Is the audience kind of less family and more
adult male,
blokes 18 to 40 type thing?
Yeah.
So did they not just put like a random six-man tag in that nobody cared about?
There was a six-man tag, but people did care about it.
Yeah. So they didn't just like parachutes and random...
No, they didn't bring in some random old Mexicans to work in the mid-card.
Okay.
Yeah, that'd be an odd decision to make. Yeah.
But Speedball Mike Bailey made his UK debut as well, who I've been a big fan of for the last year or so, and his stuff in PWG as well. So that was really cool that he did well. And AJ Styles versus Jack Sabre Jr. in the main event was fantastic.
Yeah, good.
Are you more familiar with him now? You've seen him live.
Yeah, I was a big fan. Like, it's a bit of a different style to the one that I would usually be interested in, but he made it interesting.
Yes.
And he did like a few little bits where he was talking with the crowd. I think they suggested he'd bite someone, didn't they?
Yes, yes.
And he said he'd give it his best shot or something. It was good, very good. I like that.
But yeah, a fantastic week of kind of wrestling-related stuff, which... Yeah.
Well, marvellous. Good week, then.
Yes. Yeah. We also wanted to just have a quick chat as well, Adam, didn't we, about WrestleMania.
Quick chat about WrestleMania.
Can I join in?
You should come to WrestleMania. It's not too late.
I'm not going to go.
Well, why not?
Well, in breaking news, in April...
So you're going to steal our news, but go on. Feel free, do your own. That's fine, no worries.
Well, I just thought, just seeing as you're going to have a go at me for not coming to WrestleMania,
He's going to justify it.
I'm going to justify it. We've actually got a little announcement. Well, not we, as in me, Adam and Stuart. more myself and Mrs. Scrivens, as in we've got another baby Scrivens due. So we're going to have to find a name for the new baby Scrivens, so feel free to suggest anything, and probably come up with a new name for the existing baby Scrivens.
Well, we could probably upgrade him to
toddler Scrivens.
Child Scrivens or something.
Child Scrivens, maybe, but if you've got any ideas, lob them in. Yeah.
So that's twice you've had sex now, then. Well done, mate.
Couldn't this new one just be Baby Scrivens Jr.?
It's just packed an acre in a mask.
We'll also be setting up a Patreon if you want to name Paul's child, so the right to name that will be going to whoever makes the highest bid, basically.
That's not an actual thing. I wouldn't survive that.
Donate $1,000 a month and you can name Paul's child.
I like your term as you wouldn't survive that.
I don't think I would survive that.
The wrath of Mrs. Scrivens be quite swift and furious.
I don't want to test it.
So in 20 years, we can look forward to the Scrivens brothers tag team?
Yes, yes.
Sweet. Good stuff.
It'd be like the Young Bucks, the Young Scrivens.
But a bit more like Alan Carr.
Not at all like Alan Carr.
More like
Takemichi Nuku.
Anyway, our discussion, which you just completely railroaded over there with your pregnancy announcement. WrestleMania. So we've had quite a few people message us via Facebook and Twitter and stuff saying that they would like to meet up while WrestleMania is going on. Not the actual event. That would be silly. You'd want to watch it.
We'll meet at the concession stand.
5 minutes into the main event. So we're in Dallas from the Monday. So we were thinking...
What date's that?
The Monday.
The Monday before WrestleMania. I don't know the date.
Okay.
You've got to complicate things, haven't you?
Bobby Moore, I don't know.
We're in Dallas from the Monday. So we were thinking maybe on the Thursday night before WrestleMania, because Friday stuff starts, so you've got access, NXT Hall of Fame. So I figured people would be busy those days. So Thursday night, we were thinking we'll stick an event up on Facebook. If you want to come along, come along. If someone could suggest a good place in the vicinity of Arlington, which is where we're staying Thursday night, a nice bar that would serve some nice beers that Adam might like, if you could suggest that to us, we'd really appreciate it. And yeah, we'll get an event going. And if people want to meet up, that would be great.
That'd be nice, because obviously I like to go to different bars when I go to different cities and things, and we've not realistically got that much time there because we're going to be busy doing lots of wrestling related things. So yeah, it'd be nice if someone could cut down some of that research time and name some places that would be
yeah.
Have you tried TripAdvisor?
Well, yes, but we figured we'd ask, see if anyone knew the area a bit
locals,
better.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair dues.
And we could maybe FaceTime you on an iPad or something.
Yeah.
So you'd feel like you were there.
I would be there pretty much, you know, just as good as.
So, yeah, so if you happen to know anywhere in the area that would be nice to meet up and you're up for it, let us know. We'll sort something out.
Yeah, marvellous.
In honour of our wonderful game of WWE Monopoly that almost caused the breakdown of several friendships, this episode's challenge to you, the audience, was to suggest to us some other wrestling-related board games. The following are our favourite suggestions. Hunter Beasley. Paul Scriven's Scrabble. Try as hard as you can not to spell prodigy, tragedy, strategy, or Michinoku, double word score for Partridge, Haribo, or Richard Quarry. There's a disturbing amount of these suggestions this time that actually involve Richard Quarry, not from Richard Quarry. He's getting his own gimmick.
Well, I think it'd be weird if he started referencing himself in his suggestions, but now actually it makes sense, so
yeah,
go for it, Richard.
David Gray, WWE Articulate. Try to convey the very worst of wrestling gimmicks and angles without resorting to the phrase, what was wrestling thinking?
I think we could have something with some of these, you know. You know, like people kickstart card games and stuff. Maybe we could do like WWE Guess Who, something like that. That's a very good one.
Yeah, still got the mullet top trumps on the cards.
Yeah, that's still a thing.
That makes sense on the cards.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, very good. Harry Green. The new version of WWE Monopoly, featuring the Road Warriors, Hulk Hogan, Sabu and Kevin Nash. The only difference is that you can't sell any of your properties.
David Light. Don't wake Vince. The new and exciting game from Milton Bradley has you and your friends as NXT competitors trying to carefully negotiate the board in order to do well. But careful, because if you make too much noise, Vince McMahon pops up and sends you into main roster obscurity.
Ooh.
Keith Dooley. Richard Quarry Cluedo. A game where all listeners of the New Gen podcast have to find out how, where he gets his great answers from.
Ooh, very good, very good. Andy Bainbridge Operation. Sorry, I've read that all wrong, haven't I? Andy Bainbridge Operation. WWE Edition. The objective of the game is to simply make sure that half of the roster doesn't get shoulder injuries before WrestleMania.
They will all be wrestling in bubble wrap at Fastlane.
Well, who has got shoulder injuries at present?
Cena, Cesaro.
Rollins.
It's not a shoulder. His knee. But, yeah.
I mean, they're practically the same.
Matt Butler, Shinobi, Tensai, Blackman, Kwang, Hakushi, and Pat Tanaka in a mask. Milton Bradley karate fighters.
Oh, very good, very good.
That, again, I would buy. A little sort of ninja version of Steve Blackman that you just hit.
Michael Jarling, Heart Dungeons and Dragons. very good.
Right, I like this next one, but I'm going to suggest an addition to it. Chris Palmer, Ahmed Johnson Scrabble. It's like regular Scrabble, except it has no vowels. So my suggestion would be you can have an alternative edition where you've got Farouk's, because he loves vowels, as we know from Shotgun Saturday Night.
Chris Hopkins. You're Richard Quarry, the latest recruit to the WWE wellness team. Someone has left a pile of cocaine backstage and it's your job to find the culprit. Move between the locker room, the truck, the gorilla position, the concession stand, the boiler room and the ring, gathering the clues. Is it Sonny? Is it the Iron Sheik? Is it Ahmed Johnson? It's time to play Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Simon Fulfit. Kaplunk. Every time the most over guy on your roster loses to a part-timer, you have to pull a stick. The game ends when the ball drops and CM Punk goes home with it.
Clinton McCullen, John Cena Buckaroo. You have to put as many moves as possible on him before he kicks out at two.
Nick B. Spotting how popular the mid-card wrestlers are online, WWE Marketing comes up with a spin on a classic 90s board game, 1313 Mid-Card Drive, where you play as such mainstays of the middle of the shows as Ryback, Dean Ambrose, Rusev, The Miz, and of course, Dolph Ziggler. The goal is to escape Titan Towers either to the main event or NXT and avoid the dreaded IC or US titles, which once signified greatness, but thanks to that miser Vince McMahon, spell doom for your career. Possible career offerings include romantic subplot, endless feud with Fandango, pointless tag team with two guys who really don't get along, cannon fodder for Brock Lesnar, and of course, answering John Cena's US Open challenge.
Nick Cranston, WWF in your house trap. You are Vince McMahon, and you must put together the most fiendishly complicated Rube Goldberg contraption to trap all your big stars. Diesel, Razor, Bret Hart in a big net so they'll forever platform to your B-level pay-per-views.
Simon Bailey. McMahonalopoly. I don't know if that's how you pronounce it.
I think you... Good effort, yeah.
Go straightly to the mid-card, do not pass go, and do not grab the brass ring. I mean, I think that's one thing we discussed during our game of Monopoly, the kind of irony of WWE doing a Monopoly game.
It's ironic. Scott Cavaliero. Monopoly, the IRS edition, filled with nothing but tax spaces, so you can learn to pay your taxes on time and pay them properly. Also, plenty of chin locks.
I like that.
Jeremiah Allen, Skype with Sonny Bop It. Bop it, pull it, twist it, pull it, pull it, pull it, pull it.
Have you ever played Bop It?
Yeah, it's good fun.
It is good fun.
Have you ever played Skype with Sonny?
No.
Coralim, Triple H's revised WWE history trivia game. The game where the only answer to every question is DX is responsible for everything good in pro wrestling ever.
Stephen Downton, come one, come all, step right up and play the game of life, WWE edition. Start out as a promising young wrestling enthusiast thrust into a particular job role at the beginning of the game and never change, even if you want to. Manager, commentator, champion not good enough to main event WrestleMania, creative has a job for you. Spin the wheel and make your way through the board, navigating the many problems that WWE life can throw at you and acquiring as many social statuses, Money in the Bank winner, Royal Rumble winner, owner of wrestling's sickest horse, as you can. At the end of the game, if you've got over enough, you can either retire to a palatial McMansion, marry the boss's daughter, and help the next set of players on their way, or live off the income of your sex tape with China.
Richard Query. Similar looking tag team, guess who? Michael Cole and Jerry Lawler play but never finish the game because they can't tell the difference between Diego and Fernando, Sin Cara and Kalisto, or Jimmy and Jey Uso.
Chris Palmer, play as Cesaro, Dolph Ziggler, Bad News Barrett, or any other of your favourite mid-carders in their quest for, and inevitable failure to get, the illustrious brass ring in the WWE's latest board game, Trivial Pursuit.
Harry Green, Connect Four Horsemen.
Oh, yeah, I love that.
Very good.
I think I saw that come up in the suggestions, thought, that is good.
It is.
Particularly because it involves a number at WrestleMath, Sega.
Ross Vincent, New Generation Snakes and Ladders. Roll a die to move up the board, but since times are tough, the die only goes up to four.
It's tetrahedron.
A ladder match with Shawn Michaels will help you ascend to main event status. But beware the pitfalls of Jake the Snake Roberts as he drags you into an ever-losing battle with his demons. The winner enters the WWE Hall of Fame while the loser moves in with DDP. I can't guarantee you'll have fun, but I can guarantee is the opportunity to have fun.
What's that last bit from?
It's a Vince quote, isn't it? But apparently that Resurrection of Jake the Snake movie with Jake the Snake and DDP, it's on iTunes now. It's supposed to be very good.
All right.
Should get around to watching it.
Yeah, okay. It's a film.
It's a film.
Okay.
Who plays Jake the Snake?
Jake the Snake.
Who plays DDP?
D'Lo Brown.
Thought it might be. Seems to be in everything. Cody Gatlin. WWE Guess Who Royal Rumble Edition. You and a friend use descriptive clues to discover who is this year's surprise entrant to the Royal Rumble. Spoiler alert, it's always Chris Jericho.
William Young, Scrabble, Vince McMahon edition. Like a normal game of Scrabble, except words and phrases such as "God damn it," "He's gonna puke," and "What a maneuver" are not only encouraged, they're allowed.
Michael Hansen, WWE Cluedo. Can you guess what gimmick, in what match, and in what feud Marty Jannetty will finally ascend to main event status?
Very good. Probably not at all.
Could be a long game, yeah. Dane Wojcik, Wrestling Cards Against Humanity. Where you try and book wrestling shows worse than King of the Ring 1995, Uncensored 1996, and The Heroes of Wrestling Combined.
I'd also add In Your House 4 onto that one.
Yeah, probably, yes. Yes, I would.
John Hill. It's Cluedo, but with a twist. Traverse the halls of Titan Towers, avoid becoming a victim yourself, and uncover the mystery of what exactly wrestling was thinking. McMahon with a mistress in the office, Randy Orton with a sledgehammer in the living room, Paul Scrivens with a candle in the dining room. What was wrestling thinking?
Chris Brown. WCW Go for Broke. Be the first to spend all of Ted Turner's money on attractions such as Monster Truck Match, the Doomsday Cage Match, and having big live events where no one pays to get in.
David Gray. Yes, no game. Zodiac edition.
And finally, Brendan Roach. Hungry, hungry Yokozunas.
Excellent.
But Hungry, Hungry Hippos was a great game.
Hungry, Hungry Hippos was a great game. Do they still make it?
Yeah.
It's that wonderful game of no skill.
Well, it's seemingly like any athletics-based computer game, which the only real skill is to hammer things as fast as you can.
Yeah.
Oh, like you're in a running race. So you just mash the keys. Mash X.
Yeah. Mash is such a good term to describe it. But I do feel I should probably challenge you to a rematch at Monopoly, but inside a Hell in a Cell.
Well, this feud has gotten very personal.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll probably have to set something on fire.
Yeah. Yeah, Inferno match as well.
Maybe we could get some dogs to roam around the cage. Yeah.
But we should do that, like, take it up a notch.
WWE Monopoly Kennel of Hell edition.
Do require your own dogs.
As ever, fantastic, fantastic suggestions. I am once again, running out of ideas for some of these. They occasionally crop up in my head, but then occasionally I completely lose any semblance of what I'm doing going forward. So if you have any good ideas for suggestions, feel free to message on Facebook. It's Sunday, January the 19th, 1997, and we are live from the Alamo Dome in San Antonio, Texas, in front of a crowd of 60,525.
Bastard!
That's not as many as 70,000.
Including 12,511 comps.
That's a lot of comps. I was really hoping, though, that when you said including, it would be, like, I don't know, Nick Bockwinkel, the Red Rooster. And it would have a list of celebrities that were in there.
So it's about 20% comps, isn't it? Mm.
For a live gate of $480,013. At the time, this was the third largest attendance in US wrestling history, behind only WrestleMania 3 in 1987 and WrestleMania 8 in 1992. It would also fall behind SummerSlam from 1992 in London, the big event in 1986, and WrestleMania 6 in 1990 from Canada, if you include international attendances.
Okay. Wow. So pretty big, though.
It should be noted, however, that with less than a week until the event, only 33,000 tickets had been sold, less than half the stadium's 71,000 capacity, with many locals taking advantage of discounted or free tickets in the days leading up to the show. Jim Cornette offers some very specific information relating to this show on his Timeline of the WWF 1997 interview for Kayfabe Commentaries, something you'll hear referenced quite often as we go through the year. Cornette tells us that tickets were priced at $175, $18, $14 and $10, with rent on the building costing the WWF $125,000. For comparison, later in the year, the WWF would yield a bigger gate for a house show at Madison Square Garden with a quarter of the people that are here in the building. That should give you an idea of how cheap the tickets were for this show.
Yeah. Yeah.
The show drew a 0.7 buy rate, 190,000 buys on pay-per-view, down 60,000 from the previous year's edition, for a company gross of $2.18 million.
So what was it that led Vince to thinking that he could sell out such a massive venue if there wasn't the upward trend of attendance, not in any massive capacity, was there? So why did he suddenly think that I could flog 70,000?
Can I make a guess? Shawn Michaels.
Yeah, I think two reasons, really. Number one is Shawn Michaels. He thinks that story is big enough in San Antonio to convince everyone that lives there to come and see the show.
It's and weird.
Two, it's that Vinceism of, well, God damn it, we can do it. It's fine. Don't worry about it. You know, throughout 1996, I think you'd agree, based on 1995, there was an upward trend in the quality of the shows and of everything, really. He's kind of almost a year ahead of himself in terms of, could he book this, a year, 2 years down the line and fill it? Probably. Can he do it at the start of 1997? Turns out, no.
Is there any sort of, I don't know, truth in thinking that if you book it, they will come? So, if you book this huge venue, and actually when you look at it, and when I was watching this, I'm thinking, actually, this looks pretty fucking awesome.
It does look cool, yeah.
Because it's massive. That actually they will just increase the perception out
there. Yeah, well, you've got the perception is reality thing. Yes, so people see this, and, you know, okay, WCW are putting on a lot of hot shows lately, and with a couple of thousand comps, they are filling the arenas. But if you were to look at a stadium holding, or not even a stadium, sorry, an arena holding 20,000 people, and then you compare it to one holding 60,000 to 70,000 people, well, it makes one company look a lot bigger than the other. Never mind that 80% of the show plays out in front of silence, but...
So there is a bit of bizarre, like, method to the madness.
Yeah, I guess.
Well, I was going to say, it would be really awkward if there's a really massive crowd and there's still no enjoyment or engagement in the matches.
Yeah, that would be really, really
awkward.
Yeah. But yeah, so I think, yeah, you can put it down to those two. So Shawn Michaels, he's convinced that story is big enough that people will be desperate to come and see it. And two, as we discussed there, he did book arenas this size before. And he kind of, I think, just wants to maybe G himself up to show he can do it again. You have to give away 12,000 tickets, but...
And it is, I think we've discussed something, that what he's got to do is he's got to force himself to do certain things at this point. And it's a massive gamble, isn't it, to try something like this? Because he could end up just like losing loads of cash.
Yes, well, but I think this is a gamble in a different way. This isn't him being pushed out of his comfort zone. This is him trying to get back into his comfort zone of the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah. But it's still a large gamble on his part. So the motivations might be slightly different. But
what did you say the gross was? It was 2 million.
Pay-per-view gross was $2.18 million, yeah.
So it's done all right.
I mean, yeah, he's undoubtedly made his money back on the show, but they don't do it again for a long while, put it that way.
Yeah.
Before the pre-show began airing, which sadly isn't on this DVD, the company held two matches solely for the live audience featuring AAA wrestlers, because they go down so well in the main card.
Yes.
Yeah. Firstly, Perro Aguayo Jr. and Venom defeated Maniaco and Mosco de la Merced. Secondly, Octagon Blue Demon Jr. and Tenebas Jr. beat Heavy Metal, who pulled double duty, Abismo Negro and Hysteria. And in the free-for-all match, Mascarita Sagrada and La Parquita defeated Mini Mankind and Mini Vader.
Oh, shame we didn't get to see that.
Wait for it. Disappointingly, I'm told that in Mexico, there was in fact a Mini Paul Bearer that managed Mini Mankind.
Fuck off. Really?
But sadly, he never made it onto US television. Though, a blurry picture does exist if you Google image search Mini Paul Bearer. It looks amazing.
Wow.
Yeah.
For Shawn Michaels, it's always been about being champion. Sure, he was branded cocky, flamboyant, a brazen showman in his youth. But the heart of a champion was always there. And when he defeated Bret the Hitman Hart at WrestleMania 12, it was truly the consummation of a boyhood dream. But the true defining moment of Shawn Michaels' brilliant career may have been etched in defeat. Last November in Madison Square Garden, the dream was shattered at the hands of Psycho Sid. But for Shawn, that was of secondary concern. That night, the boy toy grew up. Displaying compassion and humanity, he cared less for the title than for the welfare of his fallen mentor. Tonight, it's not about ego or accolades. There's more than just the WWF Championship at stake. Tonight, it's about justice, redemption, a rebirth of sorts. For tonight, San Antonio's favorite son returns home, older, wiser, innocence lost. Tonight, the favorite son returns home, a man.
The opening video package tells us all about how, for Shawn Michaels, it's always been about being the champion. Apparently, he was branded a brazen showman, flamboyant, and cocky in his youth.
A bellend.
How about now?
Yeah. Well, my first note just reads, everybody loves HBK.
We see Shawn lose the title to Sid, and we're told how losing the title was of secondary concern to the well-being of his mentor, Jose Lothario. That night, the boy toy grew up, displaying compassion and humanity.
To a man toy.
That sounds wrong.
It does, doesn't it? But, yeah.
Tonight, San Antonio's favourite son returns home. Older, wiser, innocence lost. The favourite son returns home.
Terrifying.
A man.
Innocence lost.
Yeah, that dude lost his innocence a long time ago. This is not a recent development. What did you make to this opening video package?
Oh, I quite liked it, and I think we've kind of seen the video packages kind of plateau into this very kind of high level, really, which they'll continue to do, I guess. Well, it's quite nicely put together, tells the story with it, it's got atmosphere behind it. It's just quite nice.
See, I would agree with you. I think this one was okay, but I've got some question marks over some of the video packages tonight.
Okay.
So I think some of them are quite clunky and poorly put together. It's like they hadn't... I think what WWE typically does very well is they have probably pre-planned things quite carefully to get the footage they want to be able to put together such good packages. And I don't think for all of the matches that they've gathered the right material to put together the right promos.
Well, when I'll say like a plateau of good video packages, it's for the main ones that carry the show.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's a difference between properly formulating a video package and then just getting some footage and Pettingill to just talk over the top of it. There is a difference.
There is a difference. Yeah. But I think if you're going to do it, you should do it well. And you're right, obviously they pay more attention to the main ones.
I think it probably just, it takes time to do. I mean, and obviously we're existing here in a time where it's not the ease of, you know, digital editing and production packages, which, you know, you could knock out a half-decent package in about 45 minutes. I think it's probably a lot more tricky to do well back then.
I thought it was a really nice promo, even if the whole thing is a load of bollocks. Cocky, yeah. Brazen in his youth. He's exactly that way now.
Yeah. And really, really concerned for the well-being of Jose Lothario, who we've seen him display such genuine emotion to his time.
His compassion to Jose over the last year or so has been second to none.
Where he just ignores him all the time.
So you're saying they should have really put this video package in about 2008 or something?
Possibly. Some lovely cowboy graphics bring us into the arena. And wow, look at that crowd.
Yeah. They've kind of got Hank Marvin-esque music.
Hank Marvin-esque?
Yeah. Hank Marvin in the Shadows?
It's a bit more country than that, I would think.
Well, it's kind of really got that, I'd say, Hank Marvin guitar sound.
Okay.
That was my feeling.
I had no strong feelings on the guitar sound, but I can see where you're coming from.
We've not seen a crowd like this on the show to date anywhere, really, have we?
No. I mean, apart from this, in our timeline, what's the biggest crowd that we've seen, roughly?
20,000 would probably be about the biggest.
So this is like huge, really.
Yeah, yeah. Fireworks go off, and Vince McMahon welcomes us to the Royal Rumble in the magnificent Alamo Dome. Alongside Vince are good old JR and Jerry the King Lawler. Oh, look, Vince finally got JR to wear a cowboy hat.
Hey!
He'll stick with it.
Well, I really had to resist the urge to whistle over you then.
Why?
Because I don't know if you noticed during this opening bit, there's a really annoying woman sat behind the commentators whistling really loudly.
Did you notice she did it through the entirety of the main event?
Well, she was one of Shawn Michaels'
fans.
Yeah. Or friends, family kind of thing, yeah.
They hype the main event between Shawn and Sid before Vince welcomes the Spanish and French announced teams.
Brilliant.
How often do we get a French announced
Never.
Team?
It's definitely more than once, but it's definitely new to us, put it that way.
Is it because of the strong French influence into this pay-per-view?
The strong French population of Texas.
It just seems like a bizarre
Is
one.
It because they just needed another table to break?
Possibly.
The Mexicans
possibly.
Were upset with it always being theirs.
Or the Spanish, even.
Yeah, it's never called the Mexican announced table. Our opening bout is Hunter Hearst Helmsley versus Goldust for the Intercontinental title. While the early seeds of this feud were planted back at Survivor Series and at In Your House It's Time, believe it or not, the real genesis would come during the Karate Fighters Tournament final on the December 16th Raw.
You what?
With the finals set as Sable versus Jerry the King Lawler, Lawler brought Hunter Hearst Helmsley to the ring to be in his corner, as Mark Mero would be in Sable's. With Sable picking up the win, a distraught King would demand a rematch, claiming that Sable had cheated. When Merrow confronted Lawler, Helmsley would attack and the duo would beat down the Wild Man. Goldust would then run to the ring, and along with accidentally tripping Sable up, which is brilliant, would aid Merrow in chasing off Hunter Hearst Helmsley. Goldust would return to the ring, where Jerry Lawler would ask him, "What's the big idea, freak?" Lawler would quiz Goldust as to why he was so upset at Helmsley for making a pass at Marlena, especially as Hunter was a real man. Lawler would ask Goldust if he was a, you know, you're a, well, aren't you? Goldust asked, "What am I?" Lawler retorted with a nonchalant, "Queer." Offering the most epic no possible, Goldust decked Lawler while Vince McMahon stole Roddy Piper's old catchphrase, claiming that just when you thought you had all the answers, Goldust changes the questions. Not so sure he did that. He just answered the original question.
So this is his face turn.
Yes, Goldust turned babyface by inning himself.
I don't know. This yeah, carry on.
On the following week's December 23rd Raw, Hunter Hearst Helmsley defended his Intercontinental title against Mark Merrow, with Vince McMahon revealing that Gorilla Monsoon had decreed that whoever won the match would face Goldust at the Royal Rumble. Despite the match containing a Helmsley can lose the title via DQ or countout stipulation, Helmsley would pin Merrow clean with the pedigree as Goldust and Marlena watched on from ringside. Post-match, Helmsley would address Goldust, claiming that at the Royal Rumble, he would show the Bizarre One what a real man looks like, and he would show Marlena what it's like to be with a real man. Goldust would also take a seat in the crowd for Triple H's match with Flash Funk on the December 30th Raw. Jerry Lawler would take this opportunity to taunt Goldust, hyping their own match later in the broadcast, with Helmsley using the distraction by the King to wallop Flash with the IC strap and win the match. Post-match, Funk would prevent Helmsley from attacking Goldust from behind, while Goldust chased Lawler and hit the 450 splash. I guess at this point they were still mildly interested in keeping Flash Funk credible.
Mm-hmm.
Helmsley would join the announce desk for the Goldust-Lawler bout later on in the show. Quite quickly, he would leave the booth and put Marlena over his shoulder and attempt to march backstage with her before Mark Merrow emerged in the aisleway to stop him. Goldust would spot this and charge Helmsley. Helmsley, however, would toss Marlena into Merrow's arms, duck, and Goldust would clock Merrow with his manager. Helmsley would then beat both Merrow and Goldust down as the show went off the air. A tag team match between the team of Helmsley and Lawler against Merrow and Goldust would open the go-home 13th of January episode of Raw, with the bout ending in a bizarre DQ when Goldust wouldn't stop meekly attacking Helmsley, who was tied up in the ropes, before he turned and attacked his partner Mark Merrow to no reaction whatsoever.
Okay. Well, why did he attack Merrow?
Don't know. They did feud for an extended period of time, but
yeah,
it was kind of weird.
At least we could say that there is a sizable amount of work that's gone into the feud. There's build to this.
So we'll discuss the video package in a second, but you saw that when the two came out. What did you make to Lawler's challenge to Goldust over his sexuality? Is that a way to turn someone babyface?
No. Well, apparently it does. It shouldn't do. I mean, we're talking with our 2016 heads here, and we're saying, yeah. well, no, actually, gay doesn't mean villain, and straight means hero.
There are plenty of bad straight people.
Yeah, that's all kinds of wrong.
And good gay people.
But the thinking in the company at this time was, yeah, that's what you should do. We'll make people hate you. We're gonna suggest that you're homosexual, and then when we want to turn you, we'll just say that you're straight. It seems a bit offensive.
But like you say, that's with 2016 heads on, not with 1997 heads on.
What was wrestling?
Entering first is Goldust to a very short pop alongside Marlena. As he makes his way down the aisle, there are even some boos, and I'm not entirely sure if it's the size of the crowd or if his babyface turn hasn't quite taken yet, but it feels oddly silent as he sort of walks to the ring.
Well, it's not him that's over, is it?
Is it Marlena?
It's Marlena that gets the cheers.
There's a couple of like signs in the audience of like "We love Marlena" once. I think actually she is.
Well, did you notice during the match that basically the only cheers in the match are any times that there's like a
because they've got the big screens up, haven't they? And when it turns to a close up of her, there's definitely an audible cheer.
Vince tells us that Goldust was misunderstood all along. Yeah, that's it.
With Hunter Hearst Helmsley, what you see is what you get. He is arrogant, conceited, and self-absorbed. Helmsley believes all women are, by nature, infatuated with him. Since becoming Intercontinental Champion, Triple H's ego has expanded more than his stock portfolio.
People think I have a big mouth around here, that I think I'm better than everybody else. Well, I am.
Goldust has always been somewhat of an enigma. He is bizarre and outrageous, a master of mind games. He is a former two-time Intercontinental Champion. But until recently, Goldust left the rest up to our imagination.
Well, you know, you're a... aren't you?
A what? No.
Jealousy outed a hidden side of Goldust? When Helmsley attempted to add Marlena to his trophy case, Marlena said no. So Helmsley took matters into his own hands. Literally.
Hunter Hearst Helmsley picked up Marlena and is taking her away.
Look out! Goldust down! Oh no! Oh!
Oh no. Marlena down! She's hurt! And there's nothing Goldust can do about it!
The relationship between Goldust and Marlena has created more questions than answers. Is Helmsley truly infatuated with Marlena, or is he using Marlena to distract Goldust? Or is Goldust putting on his finest performance? Is Goldust's real desire the Intercontinental title?
A video package narrated by Todd Pettingill hypes the feud between Goldust and Helmsley and shows Goldust inning himself but bleeps the word queer. Do you feel this package brought you guys up to date with what's been going on in this feud?
I didn't mind it. I thought that it had the information that was necessary.
Yeah, it does tell you enough.
Helmsley enters to Ode to Joy.
Wonderful. Oh,
and look who he's with. Making only his second appearance on the show and his first since episode one.
And I called this.
You didn't think it was D'Lo Brown?
No, I knew it was Mr. Hughes.
It's Sleepyhead himself, yeah, Mr. Hughes.
Not the guy with narcolepsy. He's back.
It was somebody else that was another manager somewhere along the line, wasn't it? Was Mantar a manager for someone?
He was Goldust's bodyguard.
Yeah. That's right.
Mr. Hughes. Well, it was very exciting. We loved him first time round.
Yeah, he had a classic.
It was.
Goldust charges Hunter in the aisle and attacks, taking the blue blood down and getting in the face of Mr. Hughes. Vince says, "This very much looks like Mr. Hughes." JR tells him, "It is Mr. Hughes." As Vince speculates whether Hughes is the butler Hunter had been speculating about on television.
They've got a wonderful chemistry, haven't they, Vince and JR?
It gets even better later on. Hunter makes it to the ring, but Goldust throws him out again and drops him neck first over the barricade as Marlena watches on from ringside. Hunter makes it back inside again, and Goldust mounts him for 10 punches, but he only gets a couple before Helmsley gets an atomic drop. Quickly, Hunter looks for the pedigree, but Goldust reverses and slingshots Helmsley to the outside. Goldust follows and grabs the steel stairs, dropping them over the back of Helmsley for a pop. The announcers discuss as to why Earl Hebner is letting this all go, but don't really come to a conclusion.
Why would you?
I'd say that I quite like Triple H's selling in this match. I think he sells it pretty well. Yes, I did have I think he's whacking him with the steps. Why isn't he being disqualified? But I also think, what's his bodyguard doing?
Not guarding his body.
No. Asleep?
Possibly, yeah.
It'd probably be a time for another Scrivens announcement now.
You've got a bodyguard and it's Mr. Hughes.
You're inning yourself.
Yeah. We've all been waiting for it. It's your big face turn.
No. It's just with regards to how the show went down for me in terms of watching it, because I think it's important for me to point out to anybody listening that my enjoyment of this show has been
compromised
by my PlayStation / how the network has dealt with my PlayStation or interacted with my PlayStation, because I had it on one of the other shows that I watched where, as I was playing it, the show would just randomly decide to skip back a couple of minutes, and then I'd have to try and fast-forward it to the same point. But the two kind of hour portion I've watched so far, because we've not seen the actual Rumble itself, took me about 3.5 hours to watch.
Wow.
To give you an idea of, you know, and because it would literally happen about once every minute to 9 seconds, I'd have to then, you know, fast-forward, try and find the right spot. But sometimes in certain matches, it's difficult to find that right spot. If you've got repeated, you know, if it's just a whip into the corner, they all pretty much look the same, I've discovered. So, yeah, it was hard for me to tell sometimes. And so, for example, that stuff with the steps, although I knew the steps had been used, I think that's a bit that I must have missed.
Right.
Because I'm getting replays of stuff that I haven't seen. and that's not right.
You should just come round here and watch it on DVD.
Well, I couldn't leave the house unattended. I watched this on Friday night, but I had to look after baby Scrivens because Mrs. Scrivens was out.
What was she doing?
Drinking, probably. No, she wasn't drinking. No.
Can't say that'd be terrible.
No. Someone's going to ring social services now.
No, she wasn't having. I think she went out for a meal. She had
hot date,
possibly. I mean, I know she had strudel and custard.
Adam was out Friday night as well.
Yeah,
strudel, eh?
Didn't come back till late.
Mrs. Scrivens wasn't that particularly late.
About 1:45 in the morning.
No, she was back by like about just after 10.
I'll direct this at you then, Adam. Did you find there was a more aggressive style on the show?
I guess so. There's a more incompetent refereeing style on the show, definitely. It's just not explained in any way why all this stuff that should be getting people disqualified isn't getting them disqualified.
Okay.
It made me a bit confused. But I quite liked it. The steps were used a lot in this pay-per-view, I thought. They had a good showing.
Goldust rams Helmsley's head into the steel steps and returns to the ring before Hunter takes a comedy bump, landing face first on the steps to laughter from the audience. Did you get to see that?
No, I actually missed that.
I did.
As Goldust looks to bring Hunter back in once again, Helmsley drops him neck first over the top rope. Vince tells us that George and Adam have been thrown out of the building as Lawler pisses himself.
So this was just them in all those packages waiting for the Royal Rumble to happen. And they're not there on the night.
They get thrown out.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
Yeah, it was hilarious.
Aren't our fans complete bellends? We threw them out.
Was this part of Vince's plan? Like, oh, we'll definitely sell 70,000 seats. We've got these two dickheads appearing every week on Raw.
Mm.
And then we haven't sold them, so get them out of here.
Helmsley fights back, but gets a boot to the throat from Goldust, followed by a clothesline in the first two count of the match for the bizarre one. Goldust approaches again, but Hunter boots him away, and we cut to Marlena. When we cut back, Goldust is falling out of the ring and Helmsley gets an axe handle from the top to the outside while the referee argues with Mr. Hughes.
What do we think to the look of Marlena here?
Does she look more baby-faced, do you think?
She's got a shade of lipstick that makes her look like a prostitute that caters exclusively to clowns on.
Okay.
Isn't that a Scrubs line?
Yes, it is, yeah. And we find out why she's got this, you know, so vibrant red lipstick on.
Okay.
But I thought she looked pretty good in this. She's cultivated this massive sort of 80s power hair going on. It's, again, it's kind of Bonnie Tyler-esque.
Well, I don't know if we've had this line yet or if you guys picked it out, but I think it's the King that talks about we've seen the bust in her.
Yes.
And she then corrects to the best in her.
I like the outfit. It brings out the bust in her. I agree with that.
Helmsley whips Goldust into the corner post, but Goldust moves when Helmsley sets him up against the railing for a knee, with Hunter crashing knee first into the barricade. Goldust uses the steel steps again to target the knee of Helmsley before rolling back into the ring to break the count. Not worried about the DQ, pretty worried about the count out.
Well, I do wonder sometimes with I do wonder in this match and perhaps this show with the aggressive style, because this has been quite a heated build-up. They sometimes say, well, the referees knows that it's been heated, that perhaps giving them a bit of extra leverage.
A bit more latitude.
Yeah, latitude is the word, isn't it? Yeah.
Goldust then rolls Helmsley back in anyway and works on his left knee. The crowd is pretty silent for this, apart from when we cut to Marlena, which tells me there's plenty of people watching a big screen. Goldust applies a figure four for a reaction, with Earl Hebner counting Helmsley's shoulders a number of times as he lays on the mat. That was good referee.
Yeah,
yeah.
Vince tells us that both individuals here are scheduled to enter the Royal Rumble later tonight, if they are capable.
Ooh.
Goldust releases the submission hold and Helmsley rolls to the outside, where Goldust hits a chop block. Goldust screams, "Get up, you piece of shit!"
Well, I quite like that.
To a pop from those nearby, though I gather this is censored on the WWE Network.
Is it?
So you may not have seen that.
No, no.
I think that Lawler's entered full-on Beavis mode again for this commentary, I think.
In terms of Marlena or...?
No, just he's not saying an awful lot. It's just kind of, yeah. That type of thing going on in the background all the time.
Getting back in the ring, Goldust taunts Helmsley by rubbing himself, but this is not over in the slightest as a babyface taunt.
It just doesn't work as a babyface.
It's lost its teeth.
Goldust hitting a knee breaker onto the steel steps, however, is slightly more popular. The announcers query why Hebner isn't disqualifying Goldust, which is a decent enough question, discussing that this referee is assigned to the WWF title match later in the night.
Maybe he'll let a lot go there as well.
Helmsley catches Goldust off guard with a knee and whips him to the ropes. Goldust ducks a clothesline, but Helmsley ducks a crossbody and Goldust careers to the outside. Helmsley, continuing to sell the knee, whips Goldust into the ringside guardrail before knocking his head onto the steel steps. Back in the ring, Helmsley taunts while continuing to sell the knee. Good stuff. So he does his curtsy, but he's limping.
I think he gets a nice reaction for that as well. I think the crowd are pretty hateable towards it. But no, he's selling the knee injury very nicely in a way that he forgets how to do in later years.
Helmsley goes back outside and grabs Marlena's director's chair, but Earl Hebner grabs it to stop an attack on Goldust.
You can use the steel steps, but this flimsy wooden chair. No.
Vince Superstar is in the squared circle, and right here, Colin Ray, Little Rock. I listen to you, man. How you doing?
Good to see you, Todd.
Famous country singer right here. How you enjoying things?
Oh, man, this is wonderful. I'm so glad that the Royal Rumble's in my home state, down here in Texas. I don't have to go all the way to the East Coast to see it, you know?
Come on, sing a little bit. Sing a little bit.
Oh, right there.
Yeah.
Which one?
Little Rock.
You think I'm on a roll here in San Antonio?
It's changed the word.
We're in San Antonio.
Colin Ray, let's get back to ringside.
As Hunter and Goldust brawl on the outside, we randomly go to Todd Pettingill interviewing some random country singer I've never heard of.
Oh, I did a bit of looking into this, actually, because I thought it's been a while since we've had a celebrity on it. So, yeah, his name is Colin Ray.
Right.
Okay, so I thought, well, who the hell is Colin Ray? He's a country singer.
Well done.
Good research. Thank you. Yeah.
He's also listed him as his instruments as a bass guitar. So
He's listed as a bass guitar.
He is a bass guitar. Normally, I'd associate country singers can normally play the acoustic guitar. But yeah. he's a bassist. He was very, very popular in the 90s. So I think he's actually probably about the height of his popularity around here. He was in a band called The Rays in the 80s, which I guess was with his brothers or something. And then he embarked on a solo career in about 91. He was a platinum-selling artist.
I was going to say, he's blatantly another... Because I'm not a big fan of country music in general, but he's clearly another one of these people who've sold, like, 10 billion records, but we've never heard of.
Because we don't really get the country music charts in this country, do we? So, yeah, he had 4 number ones in the country music charts.
Wow.
And I think Todd Pettingill references a song called Little Rock, which he really wants to hear something of it. And Little Rock is a song about a recovering alcoholic.
Whose dog left him.
Well, and apparently it's got like the whatever the Alcoholic Anonymous charity in America is called, like, at the end of it. I listened to it. I didn't like it.
Well, I thought it was interesting. And this is one of the things with how the network worked for me, is it basically, it cut to that interview, and then, because it just looks like a camera cut when my PlayStation skips back on the network. And so it's like, because I wrote down in my notes, oh, we're going to go for an interview. Oh, no, we're not. Because they just get back. And then like, it came to me like, oh, they're going to interview him again. And then I realised. Like, I think, yeah. Yeah.
Anyhow, old Colin Ray there, he had limited success after the millennium, really. He was dropped by his record label in 2001. He had some success in 2003. And he's still going now. His Wikipedia page also has a section for religious conversion.
Right.
But it simply says that he was raised as a Southern Baptist, but converted to Catholicism at 23.
Excellent.
He's not the most exciting celebrity I've ever looked over, I've got to be honest.
Could you not have told me he'd murdered his wife, or...?
I didn't want to get done for slander or something.
Yeah.
I can't just make stuff up about him.
Oh, on my holiday, I also watched Making a Murderer, which is fantastic, and I gather everyone's watched it, but not everyone's watched it. By that, I mean you two. But it is fantastic, and we watched all of Jessica Jones as well, which was very good, very dark.
Oh, yeah, yeah, really, really good. Really good performance from David Tennant. He's a villainous character.
Todd gets Colin Ray to sing. He's no Paul Scrivens.
No.
He's actually not very good when he does his
singing. No, I didn't think he was particularly good.
His sound is a bit 80s, I would say. His stuff from the 90s is a bit 80s, so maybe that's why he's in wrestling in the 90s.
Would you say his sound combines country and sexual?
it combines country and Alcoholics Anonymous.
Back to full screen, and Helmsley has the advantage in the ring, but hits a knee drop and sells that doing the move hurt him. Bravo.
Yeah, so he's doing a fine effort here.
Is this a bit where they talk about him being the thinking man's wrestler?
Possibly.
Is that before he does something really stupid?
Well, I kind of thought it was an odd place to move it where, you know, he's injured himself more.
He eventually gets a two from it. Goldust makes a comeback with a clothesline as Marlena is cold on the outside.
Yeah, they're right out.
Goldust hits Helmsley with fists and a back body drop, but heads to the top, and Helmsley shakes the ropes to bring him down ball first on the turnbuckle.
He pushes the ref into the ropes.
Oh, does he?
Yeah, he does, yeah.
Yeah, that was the thinking man's wrestler there.
Yeah.
Helmsley heads to the top also and looks for a superplex, but Goldust knocks him off and looks for an elbow drop, but nobody home.
By a mile.
Mr. Hughes tosses the IC belt to Helmsley, and as Hebner deals with Hughes, Marlena gets up on the apron. Hunter kisses her, giving Goldust the opportunity to take the belt and clock Helmsley with it.
It's a bit of a predatory kiss, isn't it? It's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
A bit.
A little bit.
This is a man who goes on to drug and marry a woman.
Oh, yeah.
Not in real life.
Well, he married her.
Well, okay. Sure.
I'm not aware that he drugged her.
Goldust covers and gets her, too, before Hughes pulls Helmsley out of the ring for the save. As the referee argues with Mr. Hughes, Goldust hits Mr. Hughes with Marlena's cigar, but Helmsley enters the ring and clocks Goldust from behind, hits the pedigree, and gets the three to retain the IC title at 16:50.
Tiny pop.
Hughes and Helmsley celebrate afterwards as Marlena looks on from the outside. She enters the ring to console Goldust as the victorious duo leave.
And I really hope that this doesn't escalate into increasingly tedious matches.
Oh, it's funny, because I thought this was long-winded, but I didn't mind it.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't really like it.
Yeah, see, I think I wanted to like this more than I actually did, I think.
I'm not trying to be negative about Goldust, but like, I really can't think of a match that I've really enjoyed that he's been in.
We've not seen great performances from him.
Not wrestling.
I thought Helmsley was clearly the better of these two. There's lots of confusing things happening in it, like the bodyguard that doesn't really guard a body and the illegal weapons used that aren't a disqualification, etc., but...
There was some good stuff there, like Goldust being particularly fired up at the open was good, and yeah. Helmsley's selling of the knee was very good. But again, the crowd were dead for 90% of it and pretty much killed it. And I kind of at this point thinking, is this going to be a recurring theme on this show?
It's such a shame, because when I think back to Bash at the Beach 94,
yeah,
and Dustin Reynolds was my MVP.
Yeah.
So we know he can wrestle, but he's just not having good matches.
Well, obviously, we've seen Goldust come back. When did he come back? Like 20...
He's come back about eight times.
Yeah, but his latest run
like
started.
Like 2013.
And he came back and he was just wrestling, like doing sliced bread and things, wasn't he?
Goldust
is amazing in 2013.
I'm probably higher on this match than some other reviews I've read of it, but by no means would I choose to watch this again.
No, I wouldn't say that it was a classic, but I found it quite enjoyable. I don't know why.
There's another bit of commentary that I missed out. JR talks about Goldust going for a high-risk manoeuvre, but then he corrects himself to a moderate high risk.
It's been downgraded.
Yeah. Oh, it's not that good.
I did find an amusing sight of Triple H and Mr. Hughes like walking out, but Triple H has got like clown lipstick smeared all around his mouth. I found that quite funny.
Mr. Hughes won't last very long at all, by the way. The sum total of two more Raw appearances.
Oh, so we'll never see him again?
No. There's an amusing line in the Wrestling Observer describing Hughes' return. Quote, "It's really scary when a guy who can't even adhere to the rigid behaviour requirements set forth in ECW gets a job in the WWF. End quote. Take from that what you will. I've come across a couple of reasons as to why he's gone so quickly. The first one is kidney problems. And the second one is that he liked to visit adult clubs. I mean the kind where you might want to borrow Demolition's gear to get in.
Oh!
So I don't know which if either is true, but Helmsley won't go too long without someone being in his corner.
I wonder who could replace Mr. Hughes.
You could replace... Who is it?
D'Lo Brown.
D'Lo Brown? Excellent.
It's always D'Lo Brown.
You know, there's a lot of people that are talking about how I'm going into this Royal Rumble as sort of a marked man, that everybody's going to want to get me. But, you know, that's nothing new for me. I've always been a marked man. And in this Royal Rumble, the way I see it, it's no turning back. I can't go back any further. I've already taken too many steps back. So in this Royal Rumble, there's going to be no stopping the excellence of execution. There's going to be one man standing at the end of this thing, and it's going to be me.
Most people see the Royal Rumble as a chance to get the shot at the World Wrestling Federation title. I see it as a chance to hurt a lot of people that I don't like, and even some that I do. It's going to be a nice day.
We get a couple of promos for the Royal Rumble. One from Bret the Hitman Hart and one from Mankind. Both are pretty good.
I really like
Mankind.
Mm-hmm. Bret will probably do the best mic work of his career in 1997, and Mankind is typically good.
Yeah.
Mankind says that most people see the Rumble as an opportunity to get a championship match at WrestleMania, but he sees it as an opportunity to hurt 29 people at once.
Fair enough.
Bravo, Mick. Up next is Ahmed Johnson versus Farouk. It's the match 7 months in the making.
Yeah, but we have a good clip of like the greatest promo battle of all time.
Set up way back when Farouk was a baby blue helmet sporting gladiator, Ahmed Johnson and Farouk's first official singles bout was set up in that awesome segment at In Your House It's Time, where we learned that Ahmed was now a single hobo.
With a fanny pack.
Their next bit of televised interaction would come on the December 30th Raw when Ahmed, swinging a 2x4, would save Bret Hart and Savio Vega from a beatdown at the hands of the Nation of Domination and Stone Cold Steve Austin at the end of a tag team match. Ahmed would also take the time to conduct one of his trademark unintelligible promos. Ahmed would attempt to save The Undertaker from a beatdown by the Nation of Domination and Vader on the January 13th Raw, but would be wildly unsuccessful, instead getting his ass kicked as well.
Mm.
We fade from the Royal Rumble promos into PG-13, wrapping Farouk to the ring. The Nation of Domination accompany them, and there is certainly a lot of them now.
Yes, a big crowd.
It certainly feels like a nation.
Who are they all?
D'Lo Brown.
I know D'Lo Brown.
Oh, yeah, D'Lo Brown is one of them, yes.
And Crush is another.
Crush is part of the assembled masses, yes. They even have a woman now as well, which is probably essential if you're forming your own race, as Farouk suggested he might at the last In Your House.
Just one woman to, like, eight guys.
It's a start.
Stop.
It's a start.
Okay.
It's better when it was than when it was all blokes.
Everyone get in the pile.
Vince gets a Paul Scrivensism in there. I don't know if you caught this. Talking about the nation, he says that they have been donimating.
Yeah.
You know, besides a redneck, it's you, the Uncle Tom of this world, that I hate the most.
When Ahmed Johnson and Farouk finally face each other at the Royal Rumble, it will be the culmination of months of unrest. Ahmed Johnson skyrocketed to superstardom in the WWF in 1996.
And the winner is Ahmed Johnson!
This is not my award. This is your award, the people. None of us would be here or we would be nothing without you. But this is your award, not mine.
Ahmed's popularity exploded on a worldwide level. He captured the first ever Kuwaiti National Championship. 1 month later, the new sensation tasted intercontinental gold.
On his first try, Ahmed Johnson becomes the man!
But Ahmed's storybook beginning nearly came to a tragic end. Ahmed was a target in a turf war.
Look at this man, whoever he is, just all over Ahmed Johnson!
Farouk's unprovoked attack ruptured Ahmed's kidney. The Pearl River powerhouse fought through pain but nearly lost his life. Emergency surgery saved Ahmed's life and career. Now the people's champion was on a personal mission.
Where you at? I come now. Where you at now? With home? I come to your house. We must sell this. Whether it be in the ring or out the ring, it got to be something. You know you're from the streets. I can't let you walk around, man, doing something like that to me.
The next day, Ahmed laid out his nemesis and took Farouk's weapon. Then came the reinforcements. Farouk formed the Nation of Domination.
The answer is, the Nation.
Proclaimed himself its leader.
If I want something out of this night, you know what I'm going to do? I am going to take it.
And enlisted an army of mercenaries.
I'm going to show you and this whole world that when they say promised land, they say Farouk.
Ahmed is a lone soldier.
That was an uncaged battle right there. Ahmed Johnson is ready to dismember Farouk.
A lone soldier in a turf war with the ruthless nation.
Look what they're doing. Break it on his back.
But one question remains. Can the power of one overcome the strength of a rather dubious nation?
As the nation stand assembled in the ring, we get a video package for Ahmed Farouk. We get to see Ahmed winning his Slammy last year, winning the first ever Kuwait National Championship, and winning the IC strap.
Oh, I made a note of that. What? The Kuwait National Championship?
Yeah, they had some shows in Kuwait. It was around the time of King of the Ring.
Oh, right.
That video where Sean got attacked on the beach by the Bulldog. We also see the formation of the Nation of Domination and Ahmed Johnson's one-man war against them. He's a lone soldier in a turf war. It's a good story.
Yeah. I love the fact that there's lots of mic talking sliced into this package, but it's all Ahmed Johnson or shouty Farouk, and you can't really tell what's being said.
Back live, and Ahmed enters with some cool strobe effect. It makes him look fucking massive, which he is, but this entrance shot definitely helps.
Yeah, I'd say that the lighting, camera crew, and whoever's in charge of the smoke machine are really on form tonight. There's some amazing shots as people enter into the arena.
Ahmed walks a bit to the ring before sprinting and taking Farouk down as the nation bails. Their initial brawl gets the biggest reaction of the show so far, followed by a decent one for Ahmed pounding away at Farouk in the corner. Farouk bails to the outside and Ahmed follows, ramming Farouk into the ring post. Farouk hasn't even taken off his pleather trousers.
No, and I think a few nice points here. There's some good teapots from Ahmed Johnson.
Some good teapots?
Yeah, with either one or two hands on his hips. As he's kind of admiring his handiwork as he batters Farouk.
He's making teapots.
Back in the ring, Ahmed boots Farouk in the gut and rips his trousers off. Luckily, he's wearing trousers underneath them.
Yes.
Farouk turns it around with a rake to the face as the crowd chants for Ahmed. Farouk has some sort of belt in his hand, but Ahmed ignores it and hits a shoulder block. Ahmed whips Farouk with the belt like a government mule, and Farouk once again bails.
And this isn't a DQ either?
No.
Okay.
Ahmed follows and shoves Farouk into the steel steps twice. There's still loads of gold confetti around ringside and will remain so the rest of the evening.
Yeah.
It's like that Mark Mirror stuff the first time we saw him. And it was just
with his glitter gun that ruined everything.
Well, it's just when you've got like a heated feud, that the thing to take away from that is glitter.
It sucks the heat out of things when they've got gold shiny discs plastered all over their body.
Ahmed and Farouk have a slow walk and brawl around ringside with Farouk getting the advantage. Farouk punches Ahmed in the kidney and slams Ahmed awkwardly kidney first onto a set-up folding chair.
Oh, that, I've got to say, it looked proper nasty.
He then batters Ahmed round the back with it before the referee takes it away from him. Back in the ring, Farouk centres his attack on Ahmed's kidneys. Farouk sets Ahmed up on the top rope and kicks away at his lower back area. Farouk rolls Ahmed onto his back and stands over him before applying a chin lock. Crush watches on.
And they chat a bit, don't they? I can't really tell what they're saying.
From the chin lock, Farouk lets go and stands over Ahmed before applying it again. Farouk is also doing a quality amount of trash talking as he asks the referee to raise Ahmed's arm for the submission.
Yeah, Farouk's trash talking's amazing because the frequency of his voice is different to everyone else's. So it's quite unique and identifiable.
Farouk is also jawing with the crowd and once again lets go of the chin lock, standing over Ahmed.
It's a one thing he didn't want to happen.
Guess what happens?
I think he'll probably pay for it.
Ahmed stands up because Farouk fucking loves this spot. No, no, don't drop me. Please, not that. Didn't see this one coming. Ahmed drops him. It gets a decent pop anyway. Yeah.
I've described it as an electric chair drop.
Farouk is up first and heads to the top, diving at Ahmed, but Ahmed sort of catches him in a power slam.
It's a bit sloppy.
This is one of the moves where it's like, oh, let's all do the same move tonight, isn't it?
Ahmed signals for the Pearl River plunge, but whips Farouk to the ropes, where Farouk rebounds and hits a spine buster. Damn right, he offers. While Farouk once again jaws with the crowd, telling them he's the baddest man there, Ahmed just decides to stop selling and stands behind him.
Mm-hmm.
Ahmed boots Farouk and hits his own spine buster.
Yeah, which was nice.
Which was nice.
Yeah. Whose was better?
I thought Johnson's was better, actually.
Ahmed probably had more aggression behind it, I think.
Farouk had form and technique, whereas Ahmed had power.
Just unfocused, raw power.
Well, I think what to say is I think that Farouk's is normally much better than this one. I didn't think it was one of his better spine busters.
Ahmed once again signals for the Pearl River plunge and Crush enters the ring, causing the DQ and giving Ahmed the win at 8:48. Various other nation members enter the ring and Ahmed murders them all as Farouk fails. One of PG-13 gets lobbed to the outside onto the various nation members as the crowd pops.
Yeah, nice dangerous throw.
Well, it's a good throw, I thought. It's got a good distance on it.
Ahmed struts down the aisle towards Farouk but gets attacked from behind by a random nation member. Ahmed isn't selling that, mate.
Well, why can we can always see at least one entire buttock of Ahmed Johnson? He's always always got this pant problem.
His pants
going
are
on.
Very hungry.
They are. He should glue them on.
Ahmed backs the nation member down the aisle around ringside, where Ahmed rams his head into the steel steps. Ahmed does some interior redecorating, setting up the bottom half of the steps close to the French announce table. Ahmed sets up and hits the Pearl River plunge through the table to a nice pop with monitors landing all around the poor sap's head. Well, Ahmed poses in the ring as his music plays before leaving the ringside area. A replay shows us the table bump.
The slight problem with this is his little kind of like skip down, because he's not quite maintained his balance as he does the plunge through the table. He kind of skips down, and that for me just takes away from it a little bit.
Cool looking though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
As a spot, it was pretty good. Hats off to the guy that took it, because if someone said, all right, this guy's going to do that move on you through a table.
Who got it worse, D'Lo Brown on the car or this guy D'Lo on the Brown. Table?
That was four times more dangerous.
How did you quantify it?
I just reckon it was around four times more dangerous.
Dangerosity.
Yeah. It wasn't on a stable base, it was on the roof of a car.
No, I think this was more dangerous, if I'm honest.
Really?
I also like the way this is kind of being used. Like, Ahmed keeps losing these matches, or sorry, winning these matches by DQ, And Farouk escapes, but he gets to murder some random nobody.
Hmm. Keeping them both strong.
Yeah, yeah. Similar to the first match, I think, in that I wanted to like it more than I actually did.
Yeah, it wasn't dynamite stuff from Ahmed. I think he was slightly toned down for this.
Mm. I think this was definitely a step up from the first match.
Yeah, maybe it's something to do with just how long it's been since we've actually watched a WWF pay-per-view, but I'm sort of willing these matches to be better than they actually are. Like an Ahmed, now he's back from the kidney injury, is not the same person he was before. Yeah.
And he's more cautious now, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah, and he wasn't a super worker before that. It was cool to see Ahmed again, that said, but he definitely looked, a touch more hesitant than he did before the injury. His spine buster was good and the Pearl River plunge through the table was nice, but outside of that, a lot of this match depended on Ahmed Johnson selling, which is not exactly a skill of his I'd be putting stock into.
How long was this match?
8:48.
I mean, I think for something that's been, 7 months in the making, you say?
Yeah.
8 minutes isn't long enough to build enough tension into
it. But I guess this isn't over, is it?
Yeah, I mean, at least given the context of a feud, like, this is the opening chapter of their feud in terms of in-ring matches.
Like, yeah, it's kind of like the second wave. Yeah. We've had their stellar mic work, now let's have some matches.
How much longer does this feud last?
Some time.
Really? Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
It's not over. But yeah, I kind of do worry what future singles matches between these two might be like.
Mm.
You know, there's faster wrestlers, bigger wrestlers, stronger wrestlers, and younger wrestlers than me in the Rumble, but this is my state. Do you realize that Terry Funk is Texas bred and Texas fed, and I was born to Rumble?
Well, Terry Funk certainly stirring things up on Shotgun Saturday night. He's in the Royal Rumble, and so is Farouk and Ahmed Johnson, along with Crush, The Nation. Obviously, what we saw here, just incredible. This is not over. The first battle in the war between Farouk and Ahmed Johnson.
The war is coming. Did you see
what he did? Get up here. Get up here. The next time I'm out there, don't ever leave me out there like that. You stand up there and fight for me no matter what I'm doing. You hear that? Get out of here. I'll take care of both of you later. And guess what? Ahmed Johnson, that's just the beginning of this thing. And I get you out there in the Royal Rumble, boy. I'm going to put your butt away once and all, once and for all. You hear me, punk? You're going to go down just like I planned for you. All right, Uncle Tom?
Yes, it's a Terry Funk interview. He's slightly calmer than he was the last time we saw him, but it's still a good short promo.
Yeah, nice.
I've summarised it as more sane but less memorable.
Mirror Universe Todd Pettingill is with the Nation of Domination. Farouk cuts Clarence Mason off and blames two random Nation members.
Including the woman.
One of them being the woman, yeah. What did she do or not do? I'm not sure.
I don't know, she doesn't look happy about it.
Farouk once again calls Ahmed Uncle Tom and we're done.
I don't know if you noticed, but one of those white rappers looks very much like Eddie, I thought, facially. I don't know if it was just like his little moustache.
Eddie
Guerrero.
Oh.
I think if you watch it back, I know we're going to watch the Rumble later, but I think we'll just spend like a minute just picking out that scene.
Right.
And you'll agree with me, he looks very much like Eddie Guerrero.
Okay, I promise to agree with you on a future point.
I'm confident on that.
Crush.
Yes.
I decided in this, because we get a few shots of him, which made me think he was going to do something rather than just get his ass kicked. I quite like the look of Crush, apart from the biro face.
You mean the tattoo?
No, the biro.
Biro?
Yeah, it's drawn on his face.
He's got a tattoo, mate.
Yes.
No, it's definitely permanent.
Yeah.
Definitely. It's a Sharpie. No, I quite like the look of him. He should have just remained as a kind of enforcer and never had any more matches.
Yeah, I'd be up for that.
Yeah.
When we posted the picture earlier in the week of Nation of Domination, encouraging sort of discussion around that, I believe someone made the point when we were comparing being a Baby Blue Gladiator to being Nation of Domination, the quote was something along the lines of, I'd rather have a Baby Blue Gladiator helmet welded to my skull than be in a stable with Crush. Which is a good point, well presented. Mm. Yeah.
But it's fine, like, just the aesthetics of him. I thought he's done a good job. He's lost the mullet, that's a shame.
Up next is The Undertaker versus Vader. Despite this match being between two of the biggest names in the WWF at the time, the build towards it was somewhat low-key, occurring mostly on Superstars.
Oh.
The match seemed to be already set by the time The Undertaker faced Fake Diesel on the 22nd of December episode, winning by disqualification when Vader interfered, with Diesel joining in on a beatdown and Vader hitting the Vader bomb.
Fake Diesel and Razor now just relegated to proper jobbers, is that...
Yeah, you won't see a great deal of them going forward.
And is that the first Undertaker Kane match?
No, he's faced Isaac Yankem before. Course, and yeah. He faced Glenn Jacobs as Unabomb in Smoky Mountain as well. Okay. So, yeah.
So, by far not.
Yes. Taker would attempt his usual mind games a week later on the December 29th show, causing the lights to flicker during Vader's bout with Savio Vega and announcing that at the Royal Rumble, it would be time for Vader to meet the Reaper. On the 5th of January Superstars, while The Undertaker faced off with The Goon, Vader's manager Jim Cornette would bring a body bag to the ring and claim that Vader would be putting the dead man inside it when they faced off. After securing victory, Taker would chokeslam Cornette and place him inside the body bag, which seems to have been a way of writing Cornette off of television as Vader's manager and getting him off the road in general to focus more on his job with creative.
Huh.
As we'll discuss later, Vader and Taker would get involved in the main event scene brawl on the 30th of December Raw, as well as Vader joining in on giving Taker a kicking alongside the Nation of Domination after his bout with Crush on the 13th of January Raw. Vader heads to ringside, Jim Cornette conspicuous by his absence. Vince McMahon refers to him as the man who formerly managed Vader, so yeah, that's him effectively written off TV.
That's a shame.
It is a shame. The Camp Cornette stuff with Vader, Bulldog and Owen I did really like.
Yeah.
But I guess... for him, he'd probably rather be working in creative than managing midgets.
True.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he's just a phenomenal mouthpiece, isn't he, for any wrestler that you want?
I think he's so good. I think he's a little underused when he's not with guys close to the top of the card, if I'm honest.
Right. So him managing Sal Sincere was not something you saw taking Sal to the main events?
Well, no, I think, you know, like when he's working with people like Bulldog and Owen, Yoko, you know, he's near the top of the card and he's having a really good impact because his work is such high quality. You know, those wrestlers, not say that necessarily Owen or Bulldog couldn't, although I'm not sure
Bulldog can talk.
But yeah, it's that quality of talking that goes along with somebody who can wrestle but not talk.
Yeah.
Is a really good combination, a really good use of him.
Mm. It's a shame the Mantar-Cornette relationship didn't go further.
Mm.
That could have been gold.
The lights go out and Taker's music hits for a pop. I don't know if they've changed the theme or just added more prominent windy sound effects to the big arena.
I noticed that. I really like it. I think this entrance is amazing, but they have cranked up the wind noises too much.
I think we've seen this before. Like, there's a couple of times where it does seem to be slightly different.
Mm.
Yeah. I don't know if there's just slightly different mixes of it.
Well, yeah, the next couple of lines of my notes are just, The Undertaker strolls down to ringside, the commentators shut up while he does so. This leaves me to solely focus on the windy sound. Was that there before? Have I never noticed it? Is it just really windy?
I think it's probably always been there, but maybe just very, very background.
Right.
As part of, you know, the build to the tension, but it seems to be like the dominant sound in it.
Undertaker stands on the steel steps and raises his arms. Jarrah refers to the Royal Rumble event as not having been very kind to The Undertaker.
Like when they killed him.
Well, yeah, he got battered by Giant Gonzalez, helped Marty Jannetty ascend to the ceiling and wrestled IRS. So I suppose he's got a point, yeah? Taker still has the emo tear on his cheek.
Yeah, that sullies the entrance. I liked the entrance, bar the windy sounds. But yeah, that tear is not really working for him. How long does he keep it for?
Quite a while.
Oh.
Did you two watch this together?
No.
No.
Oh, you didn't? Okay.
You're feeling lonely.
Yeah, just in general. Yeah.
The announcers speculate as to whether Vader is intimidated by The Undertaker, as Vader attempts to attack Taker from behind, but Taker spots it. The two exchange fists, and Taker does a bit of no-selling before choking Vader in the corner. Vader fights back with a back elbow and a clothesline, but Taker sits up. Vader hits an avalanche attack and growls, but Taker once again sits up. Same spot again. Vader goes to the outside, followed by the referee, and seems to be leaving until The Undertaker hits an axe handle from the apron to Vader on the floor.
It's bizarre behaviours, isn't it?
I felt that the start of that with the no-selling felt a lot more Taker from, like, a year ago or something.
Yeah.
Kind of slightly more old school.
Maybe Vader was saying he's not playing. He's not lying down. I'm leaving.
Taker punches away at Vader before heading back inside. Vader follows and takes the advantage, hitting a somewhat delicate stunner over the ropes. The crowd are back to being silent until Taker hits a leg drop to a doubled over Vader. Taker picks Vader up and hits a scoop slam, followed by a leg drop for a two. Taker grabs Vader's arm and looks for old school, but Vader drops him knacker first on the top rope. Both men are down and take their time getting to their feet, and when they do, Taker is selling his knee.
Has anyone ever no-sold a hit to the balls?
I saw someone no-sell effectively a staple gun to the balls, yes.
What
the fucker?
Yeah, the last Revolution Pro show, they had a match with Jimmy Havoc and Josh Bodum where Jimmy Havoc took a staple to the balls and forgot about it 30 seconds later.
Huh.
Ooh. There's probably CZW ones where they do similar.
But, oh, to the balls, man.
Yeah, it kind of makes me feel a bit ill.
Vader hits a low blow to no reaction in full view of the referee, but nothing happens.
Is that the one where he goes, I think he went for the knee?
Yeah, that it's just clearly not the knee.
Yeah. But also, have we missed... Basically, I felt at one point Taker did a famouser. Is that what you described?
He did a leg drop.
It's the leg drop to a double over Vader.
But I thought that the height that he got on that was really impressive.
Yeah, it was cool.
I think a leg drop underdoes that.
Sorry.
This is...
Yeah, go ahead, Todd.
All right, guys, this is Summer Bishop from Minnesota. Wait until you hear what she did to get here tonight. Tell everybody.
Last summer, I saved up my money to come. I follow Shawn Michaels everywhere he goes.
You follow him everywhere? You saved your money doing what?
Babysitting.
How long did it take you? How many babies did you have to sit?
Since the end of the summer, during the school year, I started babysitting and I got the money to come here.
A lot of stories out here. Last year she came from Alaska. Back to you guys. Wow, thank you.
Mirror Todd is in the crowd with Summer Bishop from Minnesota.
Now, I found this weird, because we've got, like, what was supposed to be the kind of this atmospheric duel of titans in the ring, and then we'll just talk to this teenage girl that loves Shawn Michaels.
About babysitting.
Yeah. This young teenage girl saved all of her money to follow Shawn Michaels everywhere. We'll leave this alone, I think. But there's 70,000 people in the crowd, or 60,000, whatever. This is going to take a long time if they're going to ask everyone their story.
But the thing is, somebody must have had a better story than that.
Yeah.
Because really, it wasn't worth hearing.
Yeah.
Faith No More guys in the front row should have spoke to him.
Yeah.
The crowd boo intently, and I'm not sure if this is for Vader or Summer. Like, I don't know if they can see this interview on the big screen and they're booing because they now can't see the match, or if Vader's doing something.
Do they still get the picture in picture?
Yeah, unsure. In the ring, Vader is pummeling The Undertaker. Vader hits a big splash in the corner and a clothesline, posing for less heat than either he or Summer got moments earlier. Vader heads to the second rope and hits something resembling a clothesline for a two count. Vader applies a chin lock as the crowd rallies for Taker, who tries to get to his feet. Taker hits punches to the gut of Vader before getting a side suplex. Taker looks for an elbow drop, but Vader moves and goes back to his ball-based offense with an elbow to the sternum area, I'm told.
Yeah.
Vader adjusts his pants and poses to booze before heading to the second rope again. This time, Taker catches him with a sort of power slam, but less of a sort of a power slam than Ahmed managed earlier.
Yeah, it was a bit clunky.
To be fair, on Vader, though.
Yeah, it's ambitious to think I'll catch this guy.
Taker whips Vader to the ropes and doubles over, but Vader counters and looks for a powerbomb. He hits it and gets a two, but Taker no-sells and sits up. Taker hits a flying clothesline and looks for old school again. This time, it proves successful. Paul Bearer waddles to ringside. And that is exactly what he does.
It is what he does.
Paul Bearer is on form tonight.
As Taker looks for a chokeslam and hits a semi-decent one to a man the size of Vader.
I'd say that's pretty passable, actually. When you consider the size of that guy, nice effort.
Taker signals for the tombstone as Paul Bearer looks quizzical in the aisle. Taker spots Bearer, giving Vader a chance to recover, but Taker clotheslines him to the outside. Taker backs himself backwards over the top rope in a cool moment.
Oh, that is awesome. That is the best ring exit you can get on any of the computer games.
He lamps portly Paul, taking him down. Lawler urges Bearer to roll away. Roll away. That is good.
Yeah.
Taker rolls Bearer into the ring, who scampers around on all fours, begging off.
Scuttles.
Yeah, his little crawling away is brilliant.
Taker looks to chokeslam Bearer, but Vader enters the ring. Taker notices this, however, and kicks Vader before clotheslining Vader back to the outside and following himself. Vader and Taker head to the reassembled French announce table, but leave it alone, instead setting Vader up neck first over the guardrail. Taker charges, but at the last second, sneaky Paul Bearer pulls Vader out of the way, causing Vince to say that Taker has impaled himself on the guardrail.
Yeah, he didn't actually impale himself.
No.
It's not pierced his foot on the spike.
That's exactly my next note. He most certainly has not impaled himself. As Taker sells, Paul Bearer gets in the ring, and while the referee deals with Vader, Bearer leaps off the apron and takes the mother of all bumps, clocking Taker with the urn and falling over.
He dents it.
By God, he's been broken in half.
The look on Paul Bearer's face as he kind of falls on his ass is amazing.
But it's almost like, it's kind of like the Mankind bump, isn't it?
Yeah.
To do, but it's like... doesn't quite look right.
If you've never seen this, like, if you only watch like 10 seconds of this show, watch the 10 seconds of Paul Bearer clocking Undertaker with the urn off the apron. Brilliant. Lawler says Bearer has sacrificed his own body to do away with the Undertaker. Taker eventually rolls back into the ring where Vader sets him up near the corner and hits the Vader bomb for the three at 13:19. Vader and Paul Bearer leave together, pleased with the outcome. In the ring, Taker struggles to his feet and for some reason chooses to blame the referee. He chokeslams the poor bugger as Lawler tells him not to be a sore loser. Vader earned the victory.
To
be fair, I think he was a bad loser, really.
Yeah.
Taker grabs a chair and throws it against a corner post before loosely trashing the ringside area and talking shit to Vince.
Yeah, that was interesting.
File this one under should have been better.
Yeah, I think my first note for this was, I was going to start, this should be good. It wasn't bad, but it should be a lot better than it is.
Yeah, I was underwhelmed by it. I was kind of expecting, not like a five-star match, but something thoroughly enjoyable, and I think this fell short of that.
Paul Bearer probably raised it up by half a star.
But absolutely.
That's entertainment, isn't it? That's not
match
good,
quality.
Good yeah. wrestling match quality, yeah.
Nowhere near the quality of Taker's matches with Mankind last year or some of Vader's stuff with Shawn as well. Like, they're both big guys who can work. So on paper, in theory, it should work, like kind of Taker Diesel did at WrestleMania last year.
Yeah.
And feel confident, I guess, that they could have better matches.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's whether we'll see it or not. So yeah, on paper, this was appealing. But on this day, I just don't think it clicked. 5 stars for Paul Bearer's bump, though. What do you make to the idea of Paul Bearer with Vader, though, as if they're getting rid of Cornette as an on-screen manager? Do you think it makes sense?
Will Bearer leave Mankind or still keep with him?
What would you prefer?
Stay with him. I think yes, a little stable there.
A little stable of monsters.
Particularly with their history, because I've not really seen much of their, if any of their WCW stuff.
Okay.
But I'm aware of their history, and I think if they had like a little stable and then there was a bit of fallout and they could play on that... and have some Mankind Vader stuff, that would be very interesting.
Yeah.
Plus, you know, mini Mankind and mini Vader are a team, so rights.
Yes.
Regular Mankind and regular Vader should be a team also.
And if the, I know they don't bring him in, but if there's a mini Paul Bearer as well, then you've got two of these stables, and then, say, WrestleMania or something, you could have, like, the big tag teams against the mini tag
the big ones
groups.
Would kill the little ones.
No, I think they're agile enough to escape.
Or would you do it as sort of a mixed tag? So you'd have Mankind and mini Mankind versus Vader and mini Vader.
Which side would Big Paul Bearer go on? Or can they both be suspended above the ring in the cage?
Mini Paul Bearer and a slightly smaller one. And a slightly lower height.
Yes. Yeah, that'd work.
The possibilities are endless.
Is there a mini Undertaker as well?
I don't think there is. Seriously. Really,
castrate that character. While
we watch the Royal Rumble in a bit, Google mini Paul Bearer and look at the picture. It's creepy as fuck.
See, this is where we got a problem. You TV guys always got the cameras where you don't belong. Well, the problem is I'm not talking to anybody until I throw 29 pieces of trash over the top rope and advance to WrestleMania to face the champ so you can take your camera and stick it, son. That's it. Cut. Who's going to win the Royal Rumble? Yeah, the British Bulldog. I've got a history in Royal Rumbles, and tonight I'm going to remake history by winning this night's Royal Rumble. Tonight, because I'm bizarre.
We get two more promos for the Royal Rumble match. One is from Stone Cold Steve Austin, who tells the cameraman to take his camera and stick it, and that he won't be talking until he's thrown 29 pieces of trash out of the Royal Rumble.
Fair enough.
Short but sweet.
The second is from the British Bulldog, and he's a pretty notorious promo. Nice double denim outfit as well, Davey.
He likes the denim.
Bulldog says he has a history in Royal Rumbles. Yeah, mostly of losing them. What's his reason for thinking he's going to win this one?
He's bizarre. It's a good reason. And the very fact that he said it means that he is bizarre.
But what?
What was Bulldog thinking?
It's a total babyface promo as well. Like, he's getting the crowd to chant for him. And yeah, but like, because I'm strong, because I'm powerful, because I've nearly won it before, because this, because that.
Well, maybe in his head, that's what he was thinking. Just strong, powerful. Ah, fuck it, I've done all that. I'm bizarre.
But how is that going to help him eliminate people, being bizarre?
People will be a bit more cautious of him.
The other alternative is he's going to come up painted as the British Gold Dust.
Or
the British Gold Dog.
Or maybe...
Dog Dust.
Dog Dust.
Maybe he's just remembering that he's got like a church bazaar to go to later, and maybe he was thinking about that.
Maybe. And more to the point, why did they not just go, no, Davey, go back and do that again?
You can't say that.
That makes no sense whatsoever.
Just say that you're really strong. You always say that.
Yeah. Where's Jim Cornette? Oh, shit, we wrote him on television. Up next is a 6-man tag team match hitting Hector Garza, Pero Aguayo and Kanek against Jerry Estrada, Heavy Metal and Fuerza Guerrera. It's now time for something different.
I like the name Heavy Metal.
Oh, do you?
Good film as well.
Interesting film.
As many people in the crowd head off to... Oh, I'm not doing intros for all this lot, by the way.
Yeah.
It's just not worth it. As many people in the crowd head off to get drinks or use the bathroom, the team of Fuerza Guerrera, Jerry Estrada and Heavy Metal are in the ring, standing around to generic music.
I quite like that first set of music, I'll be honest with you.
Okay.
It's very me, yeah.
Their opponents and owners of an equally generic entrance theme are Hector Garza, Kanek and Pero Aguayo. Do you know any of the people in this match?
No.
No.
I bet you're about to tell us that one of them's really famous.
It's D'Lo Brown.
He's in that mask.
No, like, one of them will, like, be Goldberg or something. That's
Yeah, Kanek is Goldberg.
Garza and Heavy Metal start with Vince McMahon quickly handing over to Jim Ross when he immediately identifies someone in the ring wrong. True story.
Yes, yeah.
Garza gets an arm drag before Metal gets a head scissors into an armbar. Garza transfers into a headlock, but both men get to their feet, and this match plays before what I can only describe as complete and total silence.
Oh, that is so true, and this is the whole thing about, you know, if you had like a small crowd of like a couple of thousand and you've got silence, it's bad.
Yeah.
It's bad. But when you've got 60,000 people that could possibly be interacting and none of them choose to,
it's quite a feat. Actually, because I imagine that if I took almost 70,000 people and put them in an arena and put anything in front of them, there'd be some noise. How have we got a 6-man tag here when there's no reaction whatsoever?
Do you think the three of us could go and put a 3-way dance on and get more reaction?
Possibly. Like, this is as bad as that Undertaker versus Undertaker match, like, in terms of just...
Yeah, no one can think of anything to say.
And it's something I think we've discussed quite often throughout the history of the show is how much a crowd can add or detract from a match.
Yes.
And again, sort of going back to last night, the Mighty Scurll Will Ospreay match that I mentioned, like, the reaction for that was just absolutely incredible. Like, okay, you're bringing in big stars like AJ Styles and Jay Lethal and stuff like that, and they are over, but... Marty and Will are kind of the two home guys that people are really, really into. And those two against each other in front of 1,100 people who were really into them. Like, towards the end of that match, those guys got some incredible reactions, which I think, again, just lifts something up a notch.
Yeah.
And it was the parallel opposite to this.
Yes.
Yeah. Strangely enough, they have the power to make or break a match, don't they? Mm. If you get a really in crowd to a kind of tepid match, it lifts the match up, but you can actually have a decent match and no reaction, it kind of kills it. That said, this is not a decent match.
Well, it's just, to some extent, I feel a kind of bit peer pressure-ish, isn't it? That everybody else likes it, so I better like it, whereas everybody clearly isn't into this, I better not say anything nice about it.
I don't want to be that one guy going, yay, Kanek.
I love this match, all the way.
Pero Aguayo and Jerry Estrada tag in, with Estrada hitting a couple of shots to the side of Aguayo's face. Aguayo looks like somebody's heavy metal granddad.
He looks a bit like he could be in Kiss.
Yeah.
They've just taken the makeup off him. Yeah, he's a bit, yeah, there's, yeah. There's something a bit Gene Simmons about him.
Yes, you're right. Yeah.
Estrada does his best to move around Aguayo, but seems to trip himself up. Estrada takes a big bump to the outside before Perro tweezes a dive to the outside and both men make tags. This is another thing that I don't know if it's more of a lucha thing or just this match, like two people will do a sequence of moves and then just walk off and tag somebody else.
It's just like, we've done our turn.
Now you go.
It's like three short singles matches.
Kinect and Fuerza Guerrero are in and Vince has another go at play-by-play. Kinect hits a slowly timed crossbody off the second rope as JR talks about the history of the mask in Mexican wrestling. Lawler tells us he wishes JR were from Mexico so he could wear a mask.
Now, this Perro Aguayo guy,
yeah,
he's old, right?
He's super old.
How old is Kinect?
He is also super old.
He's got sort of old body physique thing going on, hasn't he? Like, muscly old guy.
Yeah.
But is masking it slightly with a mask.
It helps.
Yeah.
Fuerza misses a dive from the top and Kinect hits a bad crossbody in response. Garza and Heavy Metal get back in and Heavy Metal hits a spinning wheel kick before an ugly looking handspring back elbow.
Yeah, I don't know what I mean by this, but I've written a cheat on a handspring back elbow. I don't quite know what I meant by that, but it just wasn't right.
Lawler says he's going to have a go at it anyway.
Oh, is this a bit where he kind of does it and then walks across the ring a bit and then hits the elbow?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, where just whoever it is, one of them's woefully out of position.
Garza backflips off the middle rope and hits an arm drag from the top before Garza literally stops and walks into a tilt-a-whirl backbreaker.
Yeah, that is hilarious.
Like, he bounces off the ropes, stops, and has a nice stroll into position for it.
Because the first part of that sequence wasn't bad, but then it's just so jarring.
The spring off the middle rope?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a nice
little touch.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Metal and Garza shake hands. Apparently they're tag partners in Mexico. But no one explains it or cares. And Aguayo and Estrada tag back in before Aguayo just tags Kinect. JR tells us Estrada's nickname is the Puma. He's Puma Man.
If only. He could fly in a really awkward manner.
He could wrestle in a really awkward manner. Kinect and Estrada have a test of strength with some monkey flips involved and a series of arm drags and drop kicks from Kinect. Kinect meekly misses a splash in the corner and Estrada gets a schoolboy for a two. Estrada tags Guerrero and Kinect tags Aguayo. I really should have got you to read this match out because this would have been hilarious.
Yeah.
Guerrero chops and kicks Aguayo, who no-sells it and hits a slap. Guerrero takes Aguayo down with something, followed by missing a clothesline. Aguayo hits an arm drag, but Guerrero gets a slap and a boot and misses a charge, taking the Chris Hamrick bump to the outside. Even that is just bad. Mm.
Yeah, it didn't look as smooth. Audacious as when Hamrick does it.
Aguayo once again teases a dive, but doesn't do it, as Aguayo gets back in the ring.
I didn't like his fake dives. The only way of describing his fake dives were a bit wankerish.
Fair enough.
There's a bit too much sort of like shouting and posing after he's faked a dive.
Aguayo poses to no reaction at all, and you can actually hear Vince just giving up on the whole thing as the match goes on.
What did he think was going to happen?
I don't know.
He booked this, right?
Heavy Metal comes in against Kinect and tries shoulder barges but gets taken down with a clothesline. Kinect looks for a figure four but doesn't apply and tags Garza. JR tells us about Garza's great future in the WWF, which, as I'm sure you can imagine, is not a thing that actually happens. Garza gets a big clothesline and an STF, but Estrada breaks it up. Garza tags Aguayo, who hits an elbow drop and a Samoan drop, followed by a senton, but Estrada once again breaks things up. Aguayo tags Kinect, who gets whipped into the corner by Metal. Metal once again does that thing where he just walks into spots, in this instance ducking under a Kinect kick. He grabs Kinect from behind and sets him up for a drop kick from Guerrero, but Kinect moves and Guerrero drop kicks Metal.
It's the one thing we didn't want to happen.
This match is the one thing we didn't want to happen. Kinect gets a gorilla press and Aguayo enters drop kicking Fuerza to the outside. In another amazing, actually, if you watch 20 seconds of this pay-per-view, we get another amazing comedy moment. Aguayo, for the third time, looks like he's going to run and dive to the outside, but just stops when he gets to the ropes, calmly climbs onto the apron, whereupon the camera chooses to ignore what he's doing. We quickly cut back to him, though, because he's decided to do a senton.
Oh, it's just so good, because he starts off like, he really just starts off the move like it's going to be something. And then, like, within about two paces of running across the ring, he's turned to a jog. And by the time he's got halfway across the ring, he is walking. And then he just climbs through the ropes.
Kinnick gets another gorilla press as Vince once again confuses the participants. Garza flips Estrada to the outside before hitting a corkscrew plancha to the outside.
Now, that was cool.
In the only good 5 seconds of this match.
Yeah, that was cool.
In the ring, Kinnick press slams Heavy Metal and tags Aguayo, with Aguayo heading to the top rope and almost entirely missing a double stomp from the top rope. Like, he grazes his elbow.
Like, that was a bad, bad finish.
He does, however, realise he has fucked that up and elbow drops instead and gets a pin to get the 3 at 10:56. The crowd cheers, presumably happy that it's over.
But I'd say, I don't think they cheer at this point. I've written that there's a smattering of applause, and really the cheers happen when they're actually leaving.
Post-match, JR tries to say something about seeing a lot more of the AAA stars in the WWF in the future, and Vince actually just cuts him off to say something about tremendous competitors.
I do wonder whether Vince had seen something about this mass Rey Mysterio happen in WCW and just said, so we can get me like a load of Mexican wrestlers, we'll just get 6 Rey Mysterios, it'll be amazing. And they found these guys.
What a fucking mess.
Yeah, just... It's like they had a list of cool things to try, but didn't get any of them cleanly.
Rey Mysterio, Juventud Guerrera, Psicosis, Super Calo, etc. This was not.
Yeah, this was pretty terrible. But you're dealing with at least a couple of guys who are in the very twilight of their careers.
Yeah.
I think that's being kind.
I'm trying to be kind.
You can see why the WWF completely abandoned the partnership with AAA after this.
The finish of it, that double stomp, was appalling.
But it's just
actually appalling.
It is just one of these things where you see something about another organisation, you think, oh, that's working for them, it'll work for us, and completely misunderstand organisational culture.
Yes.
But I think it's a similar thing to, like, someone from another country watching the WWF and seeing, like, a Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels match and going, quick, get me some of those WWF guys, and they sign Crush.
Yeah.
Like, you're not getting what you think you're getting. Like, someone must have said, yeah, Vince, Ray and Hoovy and Psicosis, they're all from AAA. Okay, well, who's still there that WCW haven't signed? Right, get me them.
But I'm guessing they've not had any time to sort of, like, do any proper preparation for this, and I'm guessing they're wrestling in a ring that is significantly larger than the ones that they'd normally be wrestling in. So that might account for some of the moves just being so bloody off, because they can't be that bad.
Well, for me, this match just doesn't fit or belong. It's like trying to combine McDonald's and IKEA.
What?
Well, imagine, for example, if McDonald's was laid out like IKEA, like you have to walk down like all the aisles.
You'd love that.
I would.
You get a pallet of burgers.
I would have a pallet of burgers. But you see what I mean?
Well, what if IKEA was like McDonald's?
And you just had to walk up to the counter and order.
Give me a table.
I like what they're doing now, because it's like Argos.
Yeah, yeah. They've updated McDonald's in Leicester town centre to be like Argos.
To be Argos. Well, there's a few of them that have been in that are like Argos now. Yeah. So, yeah, you get a ticket and it's like... Go
to collection point B.
And your order number 34 is like, I'd rather be a prime number, but hey. So, yeah, I mean, the certain part of it, that would probably be quite good for IKEA. The two just don't belong together for me. They're very different things, and this shouldn't have been tried.
This was a mistake, and I imagine it's gone in the... I think Cornette talks in that timeline history about I will just make another Diesel and Razor, and everyone is like, not a great idea. And Vince says, no, this is a good idea. I wonder if the same things happened, where he said, all right, we're going to shove this match in there, and other people said, I'm not sure that's going to work. Vince, he's got, no, it will do. We'll just do it anyway. He's got too much control maybe over what he should listen to other people.
I mean, you talk about WCW and having people like Ray and Psicosis, but for me the biggest difference is Tanay and how well he puts them over, and it is a big deal.
Yes, but at the same time, like, in WCW you've got Dusty Rhodes and Bobby Heenan ripping the piss out of Tanay for knowing about stuff, whereas I guess at least in this... JR, while nowhere near as knowledgeable as Tanay, you know, okay, you had Vince getting all the names wrong, but like Lawler wasn't making midget jokes or Mexican jokes, or which he was prone to doing.
Yeah, we've seen that. But JR was doing a decent effort on it. I think he was trying.
He was trying,
but
yes. Yeah.
It's polish a turd, isn't it? There's only so much you can do.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, at the end, he sort of makes some comment like, oh, we'll do personality profiles so you'll know a bit more about them, kind of trying to almost justify why this played before total apathy.
Yeah,
Vince trying to commentate while getting the names wrong didn't help either. Apparently, the big screens above the ring, for some reason, were turned off for the entirety of this match, bar the last 90 seconds. So that might go some way to explaining the complete lack of reaction.
Like tech problems or...?
No, it doesn't list tech problems, it just says the screens were off. Bar the last 90 seconds.
Oh, so just in case you didn't know anything about these people, because you don't, for the most people that can only see the screen, we're going to turn them off.
But if the screens had been turned on, I still don't think you'd have gotten a raucous reaction for what was going on in the ring. Aguayo was 51 years old here and very much looked it.
Good mullet.
The only person who looked remotely promising was Hector Garza, but I think just being in this match probably tarnished the idea of ever using him again.
This did nothing for anyone.
I think all things considered, this may be a strong contender for worst match we've watched on the podcast. It's not as silly as a Doomsday Cage match or as boring as a Mabel versus Savio Vega, but it was painful to watch. Like a bad comedian just dying on stage.
Yeah, and that is upsetting, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't think it really... It's not as bad as that flipping Survivor Series match with Bastian Booger in it.
I think Taker versus Taker still, for me...
It's still top.
Because the thing is, I don't know, I didn't go into this match with massively high expectations, as there were names that I hadn't particularly heard of elsewhere. So if this was a Ray and a Psychosis and it was a terrible match, you'd be like, why is that a terrible match? Because I know all those names, that they're good wrestlers.
Yeah.
Whereas this is a... These are people I haven't really heard of.
This was like an anti-Jimmy Del Rey moment.
Yes.
Yeah. A few of these guys will compete in a couple of random tag matches on Raw, but that's it.
They're never pay-per-view again.
No. Complete fantasy booking side note that I know would have never happened, but I just want to talk about it anyway. If the WWF legitimately had wanted to compete with what WCW were doing with the Cruiserweights, then after watching a ton of Michinoku Pro matches, they should have just gone with those guys.
Mm.
Yeah. That crab guy.
Gran Naniwa. Yeah.
Absolutely amazing.
A couple of them will get a shot later in the year, including the man whose name Paul is dreading. But there was a ton of great talent with awesome characters and colourful costumes that they could have used for opening slots on pay-per-views like WCW did.
Yeah.
Like I say, I realise it would never have ever happened because Vince would have never fully committed to anything like that. But they certainly would have delivered a better six-man tag than these guys.
I think so, yes.
Well, it's time for the Royal Rumble live commentary. It's been a year since we've done one of these.
I'm very excited.
So we'll get ourselves set up, have a bit of a break, and you can join us for the 1997 Royal Rumble match.
We'll have a coffee. Will you make me one, please, Adam?
Of course I will.
Thank you, Adam. And maybe a shoe bun.
Welcome to intermission. Intermission.
Right, welcome back. We're here live watching the 1997 Royal Rumble match. We are at the start of the chapter. If you happen to be watching the Tad Classic or if you're watching on the network, we're just seeing some shots of the crowd. Someone spelt Bret Hart wrong on a sign. That's always irritating.
Two T's?
Two T's. It's wrong. Louisiana Hart's Bret Hart, but not enough to know his name. And some more signs. Royal Rumble, San Antonio, TX.
That's actually quite nice.
Yeah, let's spend some time on the lettering.
I love you, Brett.
NWO for life. We heart WWF. Yes. Yep. All good.
Yeah.
So the main build for this Royal Rumble has kind of been built around Bret Hart, Steve Austin, and to an extent the British Bulldog. Like, Bret was the first person to announce his candidacy for the bout. And yeah, I wouldn't say there's been a massive build to the actual Rumble match itself.
Okay. Is Bulldog in there solely because he has had past late exits maybe from the Rumble?
He's solely in there because he's one of their stars on the roster.
Sense. So there isn't really a reason.
So we've got some fireworks going off, and who's out at number one?
It's someone in the nation. Excellent.
Looks like Crush.
Crush? Well, this is going to be off to a good start, then.
Vince says, this is an unlikely number to draw, number one. Paul, take it away.
It's as likely as all of the 30. Well, it's unlikely in the fact that if you're picking one out of 30, it is, I guess you'd describe its probability as unlikely, but it is as likely
exactly as likely as everything else.
Yes. So I think he just misunderstood probability completely.
It's like that time on the Breakfast News the other day when Nagam and Chetty was talking about popular numbers, and it's just like she had this statistician on. And they were saying, you know, the popular numbers are like number 27 and number 7 and people's birthdays. So, in other words, 1 through 31 are more popular than 8 yes. and after 31. And Nagam and Chetty said something along the lines of, well, do you pick one of the popular numbers in case, because if you win, you're going to have to share it with more people, but you are more likely to get those numbers. And like, no, Nagam, that's not how it works.
No, still, number 2's out.
Oh, it's Ahmed Johnson.
Well, who'd have thought you've got a member of the Nation of Domination and then somebody that's feuding with the Nation of Domination?
Yeah, this is highly unlikely. Yeah.
It's the one thing the Nation of Domination
but
didn't want to happen.
Look how muscly Ahmed Johnson's triceps are.
On television, they've made out that the gap between entrants would be 60 seconds, but that seems to have changed to 90 because Sean's poorly.
Okay.
Ah, so you're supposed to have a longer match?
So a shorter match for the Rumble, but longer match, sorry, for Sean Sid, yeah.
Yeah.
Ah, interesting. Does that mean it's really fucked everyone else up?
Well, it's just changed the pacing of it, really, hasn't it?
Wild, wacky fun.
And this is a reprise of their Shotgun Saturday Night classic.
Excellent. Mm. Ahmed sorted out his pants, though. I can't see any of his buttock.
Well, you give it a couple of minutes. We'll keep track of it.
Yeah. He's jiggling his leg. Yeah.
What is he doing?
He's kind of ultimate warrioring up, isn't he?
He's having some sort of epileptic fit.
Yeah. Crush is looking good, though.
Hmm.
Apart from that biro.
Okay. Ooh.
Nice clothesline. Yes. Heavy-handed, some might say.
See, this is what they did on Shotgun Saturday Night, rolling around on the floor looking like they're kissing.
Yeah, it's quite intimate, really, considering the 70,000 people watching.
It's very brawly.
Yeah, it definitely combines brawling and sexual.
Well, the problem is, so they've just increased the time that they have from 60 to 90. Are these two going to be able to stall in a good way?
I don't know. You tell me. Well, Ahmed appears to be presenting.
He has assumed the position. Well, Crush has been in prison, right? So, this is probably just right.
He'll know, yeah. The crowd don't look particularly thrilled. There's a very middle-class-looking couple in the front row. Like, why are they there? Is that the mayor of Texas or something?
Sean's family?
His mum's in the crowd, but no, that's not Sean's mum.
That's not her, is it?
Yeah, she's got glasses, Sean's mum, hasn't she? We see her later.
Well, I was postulating that maybe Sean's mum and dad should have a match against Brett's mum and dad.
Yeah, you could build that.
Kind of OAP intergender tag match.
Special ref by Jerry Lawler.
Yes. Billionaire Ted. Clarence Mason doing some shouting on the outside.
Okay.
They're having problems with the clock. So you got no clock there, and also...
Oh, it's Scott Hall. Oh, no, hang on.
He doesn't get any music either, so he gets zero reaction.
So he has no music?
No.
He must be gutted.
Oh, Ahmed's pants are hungry again.
Are they?
Do we miss the moment that it happened?
Yeah. Look at him, he's doing those crap punches Scott Hall used to do. Oh, wait, he did good ones. It's not a bad taunt.
Oh, I don't know. It's just a bad idea. Oh. I think, is that what Razor Ramon has been reduced to?
I'm pretty sure that's the last time we'll see him. Certainly on pay-per-view. Depends on what Raws we do.
Yeah,
Hang on. Right, wait for Ahmed. Oh, right up his arse.
Yeah.
Lawler does acknowledge it on commentary, talking about Ahmed wearing Speedos.
Well.
But then, if he'd have just stayed in for a bit longer, now we've got another,
90 seconds.
Minute or so of these two carrying on at it.
Which is okay if you've got two big stars who are putting on a clinic.
Crush is putting on a clinic.
Rehab clinic.
Well, that's a bit harsh, Stuart.
Oh, what? Eh?
What? Hang on. What?
It's Farouk.
Is Ahmed Johnson an idiot? He's just...
Don't answer that.
Even Crush's face says, what are you doing?
Crush is quite perplexed. He's doing well.
I mean, why didn't he just skip under the bottom rope? Because that's fine.
Mm. Yes. Why eliminate yourself?
Like, really didn't think it through. Is Crush's tattoo coming off a bit?
It's rubbing off. Yes, that's how tattoos work.
Number four is Phineas Godwin, who does get his music, but still no clock.
This, he's got Hillbilly Jim as well. Mm. It's pretty star-studded, the opening to this. Mm. Well, Ahmed Johnson, I suppose, is a big deal.
Another Vince quote here. This should be right down Phineas's alley, or trough, so to speak. Those are not different words for the same thing.
Yes.
So, why does a Royal Rumble match particularly favour Phineas Godwin?
If I was a betting man, which I'm not.
But, I mean, it's... So, I don't know. I understand, you know, when they say, like, when Andre the Giant comes down or Yokozuna...
How can anyone eliminate the Big Show from a Battle Royal? Yeah.
But the logic behind it is they're so massive, who's going to be able to pick them up?
Yes.
What is the particular advantage to a man in dungarees?
He's too stupid to go over the top rope. I don't know.
Or maybe he assaults everyone anyway, so...
Look, Crush again, lights rolling around on the mat with other men.
To be fair, Phineas is fairly big, but he's not gigantic.
No.
He's no bigger than Crush.
He's no Henry Godwin.
No. The thing is, we like Henry Godwin.
Yeah, Henry Godwin's good. And Phineas is Midian.
Naked Midian.
Is that worst gimmick ever?
I don't know, that Nazi stormtrooper in Smoky Mountain...
Yes.
Or one of the things on that Michinoku Pro DVD was someone dressed as a giant zebra.
Adam's drinking tea, he's nearly spat it out across the room.
Yeah, and well, the character's name is also Giant Zebra. Google it.
Well, Giant Crab Man's dead good.
Yeah, but... he's not giant, though. He's just a regular-sized man who happens to be a crab.
He has big, giant crab hands.
I've been informed his backstory is he was found under a bridge. Ooh. Oh, number five is Stone Cold Steve Austin, who gets no reaction whatsoever, like even less than Phineas.
Why?
I've no idea. It's in Texas.
Yeah, are you serious?
And look, there's an Austin 316 sign. That, like, Austin has been on an upwards tangent since in the last few months.
Yeah, certainly. Ooh,
to be fair, he was struggling to take off his vest there. That didn't look good. He almost like tied his hands behind his back, taking off his
Crush
vest.
What's Crush doing?
And to be fair, Phineas is all over
Phineas
Steve Austin.
Phineas is battering Stone Cold Steve Austin. I never thought I'd say that.
Let's make him look like a chump.
It's probably for the best.
Well, Crush is there.
Well, I think Crush is going to have a good run. He might be in for MVP if he stays in for a long time.
The thing is, you sometimes get that in a Royal Rumble, don't you? Like an unsuspecting person who really doesn't quite deserve to get such a long run.
Ooh, there's a bit of a skip in the
layer DVD, transition there from the DVD.
Yeah. Layer, what's layer transition?
It's halfway through, basically.
Oh.
Essentially, the DVDs are, it has to run its course of a layer and then it has to switch on to the next one behind it.
Oh, the one thing they didn't want to happen.
Yeah.
Austin doesn't care, though.
Yeah.
There you go.
What?
Oh, we got the clock.
It's Crush gone.
Yeah.
And the Nation of Domination are not happy. A fairly low stunner. Ooh, that's
he
new.
He is trash talking.
Shouting in the face. That looked quite interesting. I'd like to have heard that. And... Oh, to be fair, that was good. That was good. I like that.
Phineas.
Properly lobs him over the ropes.
Are the crowd reacting for this now with Stone Cold?
Not especially.
Seriously, what is wrong with them?
Getting eliminated by Phineas Godwin, though, has to be an all-time career low for anyone, even Crush. It's Bart Gunn.
Oh, splendid.
Bart Gunn, he's looking younger.
He's looking ripped.
I'll tell you what, he's slid in there, and I'm not surprised. Look how greasy he looks.
On TV, you've missed the hugely emotional Billy Gunn injury angle where Bart drops him over the top rope neck first and Billy sells it like death.
Really? So is Billy Gunn off telly at the
minute? Yeah, clearly a retread of the Sean Owen stuff from a year earlier, except nobody cares.
Ah. But
okay.
It's a good effort by Bart Gunn there.
Oh,
that was bad.
Was it almost like he was going to do almost like a 619? Like
Bart Gunn and his trademark manoeuvre.
Well, or kind of even like the DDP kind of
sticking
the ropes thing.
Stone Cold doing some push-ups in the ring there.
I can't really do push-ups.
That doesn't surprise me.
Can you not?
I can do a few, but, like, to be honest, my arms get tired pretty quick.
try and get up to doing, like, 30 or something.
Austin's doing some trash talking.
You can get some apps that help you out with it.
What, they make me stronger and less heavy?
No, they just basically give you sort of times to try.
Austin looking at his imaginary watch.
Or maybe he's just got, like, a really kind of super futuristic smartwatch. The clock is up now.
The crowd are reacting now. The clock's there, so they are counting down with it.
So all they're really interested in is time.
Digital clock readout. That's what we're after.
It's looking like a step up from the one that we had in kind of like the 94 and more.
It's Jake the Roberts who's He's bought back his belly.
What was his snake called for this one? He did say he was going to have a particularly big snake, didn't he?
No, Jake, put your shirt back on.
Yeah. I mean, I think when he first came back and he had that T-shirt on, it was to cover up a gut, and then he kind of lost it, so he lost the T-shirt, but he's got the gut back.
This is also the last we'll see of Jake the Snake Roberts. He's gone after this.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, oh, he has got some. But, like, he tell you what, he nearly tripped up Stone Cold with throwing the snake in.
The crowd are wanting a DDT now, naturally.
Yeah, he's still one? Got the thing. He's still in the crowd's general conscience.
He's just conscious. A big name.
That's the one.
Even before, like, I really knew wrestling, I'd have heard that, like, he's one of those kind of upper-tier guys that, you know, you'd have heard of your Hulk Hogan's, your Undertaker, your
Yeah.
Jake, like, I think it's just his gimmick.
Yeah, and he was because he was never he was never champion, was he?
No,
so he was never up there. But I think he was always like a crowd favorite.
Yeah, I mean, he talks on his DVD about kind of a point being like the gatekeeper to Hogan, so heels would face him on their way up to facing Hogan.
Yeah,
okay. Oh, the ref's dragging the snake.
Because I mean, he was
probably for the best.
He was very good back in the day, right?
Oh yeah, he was never like an exceptional kind of amazing athlete or anything, but he got it.
Yeah,
like,
his promos were really good.
Yeah, yeah.
But is he in the midst of all sorts of problems at the minute?
Yes, I mean, that's obviously the reason he ends up going. Number eight.
Who's next? He's just done the signal for the DDT.
The clock's gone again.
And he's been dumped. Ah. Oh.
It's the Bulldog.
He gets a pretty positive reaction. I think his face turn is in motion.
It's probably because he's bizarre.
It's definitely because he's bizarre.
Well, I've got to say, things are taking a turn for the up now, I think, content-wise. Oh, yeah. Straight in there and...
Is Jake trying to get his snake out?
So again, Bulldog and Austin have been pretty much feuding on TV. We saw a bit of that way back at In Your House It's Time, if you remember last time we watched a WWF pay-per-view.
Jeez, so long ago. Yeah.
Now, I've really got to say this, but you know those tassel on Bulldog's boots?
Yeah.
Does it look like he's just got straw tucked down there?
Well, I was thinking they kind of look like, you know, like curtain edge trimming from the 1980s.
Yes. Maybe that's what it is.
I will defend the gap in time between pay-per-views because, well, we did Starrcade and Shotgun Saturday Night and people requested those.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the other episodes just were less work for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was really busy. I was working all the time.
I will always hate you for Santa with Muscles, though.
Okay. That wasn't me.
That was the public.
Yeah.
You gave them the option.
They took it, though. Yeah. They didn't have to pick it.
There's a bit of pant grabbing from Bulldog. Oh, there's a clock.
Are you sure this is 90 seconds?
Well, you know, it's never bang Royal on, Rumble's is it?
Like, yeah.
I quite like that little face plant. Nice. Off the ropes. Well, who's it going to be this time? So we're down to the zero.
We're number nine.
The entrance is flashing. Who is that?
It's Piroth.
Who?
He's one of the guys who wanted out to In Your House It's Time. No reaction for Piroth, by the way. Although, apparently, he was one of Doc Hendricks' top 10 picks for the Rumble.
Really? By the way, let me have 10 picks.
Yeah, why does he get 10? Like, he literally has a 1 in 3 chance of winning.
Yeah, I reckon if I had 10 picks for this year's Rumble, I'd do all right. I'd probably get a winner.
JR tries to sell the lack of reaction for Piroth as being a heel, but they just don't care.
No one knows who he is.
And our pal Francisco Garza has given us some more tidbits on the AAA guys. Apparently, Piroth's gimmick in Mexico is pretending not to be Mexican.
Okay.
Curious.
Really? Is he any good?
I've never really seen him.
Yeah.
He kind of looks, generic Mexican wrestler.
I like his sort of tessellated pattern trousers.
Well, now he's going to get battered by Stone Cold and the Bulldog, I think.
Well, Stone Cold's just done like a little dive off the second rope. It's really, like, this looks a completely different Stone Cold from the one we first saw now.
Yeah, I mean, it's a year since we first saw him, isn't it?
But, obviously he's had this persona transition, but his in-ring now looks completely new.
What I was quite liked about the Stone Cold assault was it was quite frantic and quite aggressive, but done well.
Number 10 on their way out. Who is it?
It's
the Sultan.
D'Lo Brown.
Presumably Mr. Backlund is still screaming at traffic in New York.
Yeah, but he has got the Iron Sheik with him. That's pretty good.
Tell you what, I do love those shoes.
Do you want a pair? Birthday?
How much would it be for a pair of the Iron Sheik shoes?
He'd probably sell you them.
The thing is, I like them. I'm not sure how practical they'd be.
I don't think they're designed for practicality.
Well, why is he wearing them to wrestling?
Well, I don't know. Maybe it's the same logic as a lot of women. They don't buy their shoes based on practicality.
In fact, a lot of female wrestling outfits are not designed around practicality, as evidenced by the number of nipple slips that happen.
I think they are designed around practicality.
That's a different kind of practicality.
Well, Piroth is nearly over. Sultan's working on him. Oh, he's hanging on.
He means out of the ring, not the crowd care.
Just battering to the face. I do like the Sultan's kind of look.
Like a pantomime villain.
Yeah. I like his mask.
Who's behind you?
He's had his tongue ripped out. Oh, Piroth can't slam the Sultan. Bad idea.
He has put on a lot of weight since we've been watching.
Yeah, like compare that to Fatu in 1993.
Yeah.
Good scoop slam.
In fact, is he pretty much up to Rikishi size there?
No, Rikishi's bigger.
Clock's going on again.
I think another 50 pounds.
Fucking hell. What was his top build weight?
400 and something.
Bloody hell. Chunky.
Whether that was legit or not.
He's still wrestling, right?
Yeah, intermittently.
He thought about doing an elbow drop then, but didn't. Just, I'll punch him instead.
Number 11 is...
is this another Mexican guy?
Spangly mask.
He's very glittery.
Oh, he is.
It's Mil Máscaras.
Oh, the old guy.
Nothing for Mil Máscaras either. Vince says Priaroff and Máscaras are countrymen. What does that have to do with anything? Mm. Máscaras is 58 years old here.
Fuck, he looks in good shape for 58.
And despite his lack of reaction, he's one of the biggest wrestling stars of all time.
Yeah.
In Mexico, he starred in over 20 films and appeared on 3 postage stamps.
On 3 stamps?
Yeah.
That's quite amazing.
He was the first ever masked wrestler to compete in Madison Square Garden and previously appeared for WCW at Clash of the Champions 10 in 1990, facing Cactus Jack, where he sold nothing. In April 2012, he was inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame by his nephew, who currently works for them and is...
He just did...
Alberto Del Rio.
Correct. Presumably his performance here wasn't taken into consideration.
Sultan just did really, really shit belly-to-belly suplex. Yeah.
Well, it's probably more to do with Máscaras uncooperating. Uncooperating.
Is that one of his things? Is he difficult to work with?
He's legendarily selfish.
Oh, okay. Should get on with Hogan then.
Let's book them against each other.
Yeah. So is he kind of almost like a Mexican equivalent of Hogan, would you say?
Yeah, he's like a very big cultural figure.
Has Hogan figured on stamps?
Not over here.
mainly the Queen.
I know in North Carolina you can get Ric Flair scratch cards.
You what?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
You win the right to pay off his divorce fees.
And Triple H.
12 is Hunter Hearst Hemsley.
Is he still kind of selling?
He is a little bit. That's a bit of a ginger jog down to the
Maybe
ring.
Maybe his knee legitimately hurts.
Yeah. I think good job, Triple H.
I do think it is the best way to sell something is to have a legitimate injury.
Yeah.
I'm selling my arm hurts. It's broken. Yeah. Hemsley going for the bulldog.
And I've reached that kind of stage of the Rumble now where we've thrown out some of the cannon fodder.
A little bit.
And we've got kind of this mid-ground where you can have several different rivalries going on.
So what do you make? Okay, so we have the overall theory that putting these Mexican wrestlers in there would have drawn people to the arena, which we're not necessarily buying. But would it have been any better to have your Aldo Montoyas, your Sal Sinceres, your Goons, your T.L. Hoppers in there instead?
Ooh, Sultan's gone. Eliminated by the Bulldog.
Or does it just not matter?
I don't think it
matters. Someone
either.
Of the caliber of Mil Máscaras, obviously, we know who he is. I mean, obviously, I'm talking about me and Paul, not you necessarily, but we don't watch a lot of Mexican wrestling.
Neither do I.
But we still know who he is. But you've got a greater knowledge of worldwide wrestling than we perhaps have. And so I think there's merit in putting him in there. The other guys, if no one knows who they are, I really don't think it's going to make a difference.
I mean, do you think it will draw eyes from Mexico to
WWE that's the theory, but I just don't think it worked.
No.
Look, Máscaras having a cuddle there with Piroff.
Well, yeah, the countrymen are...
Hey, it's Owen Hart.
Slammy award-winning Owen Hart. I'm slightly gutted now that we haven't got any sound on because I want to hear his music.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Is Razor the only person that doesn't have music?
Yes. Presumably it was just technical problems at the time.
Oh, he sounded Slammy to a ref.
Yeah.
Owen going for Austin.
Have they got something going on?
Well, Owen's Bulldog's tag partner. Owen doesn't seem to like Bulldog picking a fight with Austin.
Oh, okay.
That seems to be the gist of it.
Oh, God, like...
What I'm reading.
Okay,
like... what are you doing? Like, just stay away from that guy.
Shoot or... Yeah.
So now, obviously, Bulldog and Owen will work over everyone until they turn on each other at some point, I'm guessing.
Well, just you watch.
It's the standard Royal Rumble tag thing. Oh, no.
It's the one thing Bulldog
he
didn't
is
want
bizarre.
To happen. Well, that could lead to a tag split, couldn't it?
It possibly could.
Owen's saying that he didn't mean it. He didn't mean to throw out the Bulldog. He was after Austin all along.
Bulldog is currently shouting, "You put mute!"
Is he?
Yes.
In your house.
Well, to be fair, that was kind of nicely worked out, in it was fairly believable that it was a genuine accident. So I think all concerned deserve some credit for
that. Obviously what they're building to is the European title match that we saw on the Owen Hart of Gold episode. Yeah. So that's kind of where this is heading.
Excellent. Okay.
That's the one time we've kind of skipped majorly forward in our own timeline.
Right. Well, this is always the stage that I'm a little bit not hesitant about with the Royal Rumble, but it's kind of like you're just waiting for something big to happen.
Gold dusts out.
Curiously, he gets a better reaction now than he did for a singles match.
He's reapplied his face makeup. He's going straight after Triple H, but Austin just keeps punching him in the stomach.
Is he still? Oh, no, he hasn't. For a minute, I thought he had a wig on, but he's not.
Has Marlena come out with him?
Yes, she's somewhere. Well, she was in the aisle, put it that way.
Well, was it her that got the pop then?
Possibly. Yeah.
They should have showed more shots of her, because the crowd liked that.
Yeah.
This is the first show in a long time we've not seen Sunny on.
Yeah.
Even not managing someone, she generally just appears in a segment or something.
She's reliable on telly. Where is she at the minute?
97, she's very much phased down.
Ah, right, okay.
Like, it's more about Sable and Marlena in 97.
Has she been, bit problematic?
Possibly, but I think they're all problematic. Everyone's problematic in 97.
Okay. Even Marlena?
Even Marlena. Actually, I don't know. That's unfair.
Yeah. Aldo Montoya?
Aldo Montoya is a massive problem in 1997.
Seriously?
No. He could try, but I don't think anyone would care.
He's really tearing up superstars.
97, I think, is when he gets to become just incredible.
Really?
He is just incredible.
Although, if you go on the WrestleCon website for the Dallas WrestleCon, he's currently announced as Justin Incredible.
Oh, okay.
That's brilliant.
Number 15 is...
someone with hair, someone with a mask. It's a Mexican.
Cibernético.
To be fair, he looks quite big and quite cool.
Yeah, he's got a bit of a look to him, hasn't he?
Yeah.
He's not Drago or Pentagon, though, is he?
This is 1997, isn't it?
To be fair, he's coming in, though, and he's making an impact. The focus is on him. He's got a cool mask. He looked quite big. I quite like the look of that guy.
Yeah, he's got something more about him than the other one.
He's got an intensity to him. Owen's going after him now.
And most people are just lying on the floor at the minute.
Well, Triple H and Goldust are, yeah. Stone Cold's just... hiding
chilling
in the corner.
Waiting for an opportunity, I think. On Owen? I don't know.
Anyone?
Anyone, yeah, I guess.
He's got quite cool gloves, I'll give him that.
Oh, he's going after his mask.
He's trying to rip off his mask. What a cunt.
Yeah. Is that the biggest kind of dishonour that you can do?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Ripping masks, man. That's not on.
A lot where the Undertaker ripped off Kane's mask.
In that Survivor Series.
He's not a Mexican luchador,
though.
Was
it SummerSlam?
Oh, SummerSlam, yeah, that's right, yeah.
And then nothing really happened with it.
Yeah,
there was that brilliant interview afterwards. Is that where he's talking about being in his yard?
Is that possibly.
Little promo?
He talked about his yard for quite some time.
Yeah.
He's a yardie.
He's not.
Triple H
over but not out.
Boss man attack by Stone Cold.
Number 16.
It's Sable and with her, Mark Mero.
Who's gone? Oh, is that the one that I like? Gone?
Yeah, yes.
Oh,
don't get rid of him.
Yeah, he was all right.
Get rid of Piroth. Well, they just have.
Oh, he's gone.
Yeah.
Mascaris has taken care of all the other Mexicans.
Don't go to the top rope. No, like, you've got to eliminate yourself. You clearly... what were you thinking?
Is that a Mascaris says, no one's eliminating me, I'll eliminate myself.
Correct.
No, you can't
just get back inside... Well, maybe you can. Maybe see. Yeah, okay, the refs have noticed now.
You don't understand the concept, Mill. Get out.
Yeah.
JR describes it as a mental error.
Was that a genuine mix-up?
No, he genuinely just would not allow himself to be eliminated by anyone else.
So,
I'll eliminate myself. Yeah.
Wow. So now we've had two people eliminate themselves in this Rumble. Brilliant.
Correct.
Triple H is gone.
Well, that's unexpectedly early.
So Goldust's got all his heat back on Hunter Hearst Helmsley.
Goldust gets his revenge.
Mm.
So we've only got four in the ring now. So we've got Mero, Goldust, Stone Cold and Owen. Well, that's, to be fair, it's quite a good four.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got Sable and Marlena at ringside.
Ooh, will they get in some kind of fight?
Yeah, will they get involved?
Sable's level of wrestling at this time might be.
Yeah, it's probably getting
beginner.
Suplex Goldust and get out.
Possibly.
Do you think there might be some kind of slap?
Yeah, slaps probably I'm
going to do some spoilers for you. That didn't happen.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Who's this? So somebody's going back and gets a wave.
It's another... Who is it?
That is a Latin lover.
The Latin lover. Where's a kind of Ricky Martin for
According
the
to Francisco,
there.
Here we go, Latin lover won the first season of the Mexican equivalent of Strictly Come Dancing.
I think he just super-kicked Goldust's butt.
He did. And he also played a stripper in a Mexican soap opera.
Excellent.
So he's pretty high calibre then.
Mm, well, this is stuff he would go on to do.
Oh, okay.
He does have a Playboy bunny on his pants. Mm. He gets good pops for his kicks.
That was pretty good. I thought he kicked Goldust's butt because he couldn't reach up to the head, but he just proved that he can. Mm.
JR and Vince once again tell us that Mera and Sable have made up, and Lawler insists that Sable has her eyes on him. So he's in the stage of wanting Sable now, not calling her a horse-faced hoe.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting how he sort of goes from one to the other, really.
Yes.
Stone Cold, I'm going to go at Mero there.
They had some decent stuff last year.
It was a busted lip incident. Oh, nice.
A bit of a cat skinning there by Owen.
Tell you what, that technique was beautiful, wasn't it?
Yes.
He likes his kicks.
Owen having a go at Goldust.
Yeah, a bit clumsy there in the corner.
He's gone.
quite an awkward manner falling to the outside.
I like the referee's kind of theatrical... kind of symbol to show that he's out and he's got to go.
You have actually, in fact, been eliminated. Would you please leave?
Yeah.
you've got to go.
That wild and wacky sign's made a few appearances now.
It has.
It is... Farouk.
I reckon Armour Johnson will come out at some point during this stint now.
You reckon?
I reckon.
Do you reckon
he's just been chasing him around backstage?
I would have liked to have seen a bit of backstage antics with them too.
Oh, they could have done a bit of backstage skit, couldn't
they? Kind of a Benny Hill skit.
Not Benny Hill, that wouldn't have really...
Would you reckon that'd cheapen it?
Yeah, it's not the right tone for Armour Johnson against Farouk. Heavy hitting action. Latin lover's gone.
Ooh.
They've cleaned up some of the gold around ringside, but it is remaining. Oh, there we go.
Oh, good.
Good clothesline. Farouk did not like that.
We get a pop for Stone Cold and Farouk having a fight.
To be fair, this
and
is
here
the energy.
Oh. Comes... Axor Ahmed Johnson with the world's biggest 2x4.
That's like...
The crowd are going mental.
It's like a rafter.
It's the biggest pop of the night so far, easily.
That is brilliant.
But why is that so massive?
Yeah. That is
I don't
big.
Know.
It's so big, it's unwieldy.
Yeah.
And I could have just seen it. You know where, let's say, a dog's got like a stick that's too big to fit through a door? And it could have been that, like, Ahmed, if it had held it the wrong way, wouldn't have got through the ropes, and that would have been priceless.
You're comparing Ahmed Johnson to a dog?
No, not at all. But I'm just saying, the potential for humour there was quite high, and it didn't.
Okay.
Is it Austin on his own?
Yeah, Austin is on his own.
Oh, he's just eliminated Mero?
Yeah, Mero is such a nobody these days that we don't even see his elimination.
I kind of feel sorry for Mero, because he was a big deal as Johnny B. Bad.
Did you know that clock just then started at 11?
I did.
That's amazing. You never see it.
Ah, Sammy Vega. Excellent stuff.
Like the way Armour Johnson is wandering back now.
With his plank.
Yeah. Well, he's finished.
Savio Vega, Savio's obviously these two have got history.
Yeah. They actually referenced the Caribbean strap match on commentary.
Oh, cool.
Yeah,
okay.
And said it was one of the few good strap matches ever.
Does Savio Vega get a reaction when he comes out?
Not particularly.
What happens to Savio Vega long term?
You'll see.
He's that special appearance.
He's around, think, until the end.
Nice kick.
To be fair, that was a really good kick, one of his best.
So now I reckon he's going to get rid of Stone Cold and Savio Vega all the way.
Vega Mania.
Yeah. What was that?
No, I think that was deliberate.
Okay.
Austin held on to... A little bit. To be fair, this is quite a good little segment.
Yep. Sheamus ended.
His elimination gets a pop, so I think the crowd are warming to Austin's performance.
He's been good, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's eliminated quite a few.
And like I say, that kind of frantic, aggressive style, and he's calling more people out.
Yeah.
Arrogant.
Well, what should happen now is, just to really trick him, they should just bring out like about 13 people for the next entrant.
See, the Nation of Domination is the next entrant.
Maybe they should do that one time, just how they put the... Because I see the Royal Rumble as some kind of tombola. Like picking out, or raffle, picking out a ticket. And maybe they'll just put on their ticket instead of, like, Crush. They put in Nation of Domination.
Maybe they'll bring Jesse out the James. Road dog. Yeah.
Lawler says, he's a promising young singer. I wish he'd promised to stop singing.
It's a shame that he's not singing his theme tune as he comes out.
Yeah, not got time, really.
I can't see that he's going to last long.
Do you remember that Royal Rumble number-picking segment with Eddie Guerrero and Ric Flair, where Eddie Guerrero stole Ric Flair's wallet and number?
No.
Yes, I remember that.
I think it's the 2005 one.
Oh, that is good. He's just put like a little hood up or something.
Yeah, he's
or
doing collar. kind of Elvis type thing.
I like that. That's quite.
You probably won't see him well in a Royal Rumble.
No. Oh, no, he's, no stayed
he
in.
He went over, but he's still in. Oh, but Stone Cold's like, get out.
Yeah. Not the best bump to come
out of. Yeah, you can see the crowd reaction now when Austin eliminates people.
He is getting boos for his taunting, though.
The crowd has come to life.
Well, that
somewhat.
Is quite wankerish.
And is chatting there.
So we've had, in essence, a couple of jabronis.
Yeah, so I'm guessing the next person is going to
be Bret Hart.
Ooh, that'd be interesting.
Well, that's going to be my prediction.
That'd be highly unlikely if it was Bret Hart to come out now.
Well, 21 is an unlikely number to pick.
Yes, it is.
It's
so
unlikely.
It's just as likely as every other number.
Come on.
Stone Cold's actually just got time for a bit of a break in the minute.
What they should do is just like have him get him some refreshments, so like have a coffee and a snack.
Or a beer.
Or a tea, like he was so fond of.
Yeah, a Kit Kat.
A nice cup of hot tea.
Have a break, have a Kit Kat.
Have a break from the Royal Rumble. Have a Kit Kat.
Good face.
Oh.
Is that Bret Hart's
Can
music?
You guess whose music has hit? Yeah.
Yeah, he's selling that one as something he didn't want to happen. There's some prick with a laser pen, isn't there?
Yeah, Bret gets a big pop, by the way.
Mm. Yeah, I think.
Shit's going to go down,
people
basically.
People like him, don't they?
I heard something on the radio, like this is some time ago now. I often start stories like that, I don't know. Where they were talking about laser pointers and planes, and it's like surprising how many laser pointers end up getting pointed at planes.
Yeah.
It's like idiots. Real idiots.
You need a pretty powerful laser pointer to get a plane.
Well, you can buy them by all accounts, but like don't do that. That's
Stone Cold's pants have come down a bit. I can
see
his tan line.
Yeah, nice clothesline by Bret, though.
Yes.
Well, yeah, but that is some tan line, isn't it?
I think, unless you're Sheamus, you've got to be tanned as a wrestler.
Or Paige.
Right? Or Paige, yeah, who's ghostly white.
Have they ever stood next to each other?
Probably.
Sheamus and Paige.
Like on TV, because they are both very
pale
compared to all of the other wrestlers. All right, a few punches. Little poke to the eye. Nice heel touch.
Marty Scurll was doing some eye pokes last night.
You can't beat an eye poke for a little heel move. Somebody's got a little heart, Bret Hart sign.
Is the crowd reaction still continuing to these two?
Yeah, it's better than it has been for the rest of the match.
Yeah.
I've got to say, Bret looks like he's got a bit more ferocity than we've seen him with previously.
Well, it's interesting, because if the build to the Rumble winner has been...
Based around
Bret,
these two.
Austin or Bulldog, and Bulldog's gone now, then I guess it's,
these two.
That's what the crowd is expecting. Jerry Lawler? Is he going to get in and put the boot into Bret by any chance?
He's telling us it takes a king... There's a guy with a mullet there.
Yeah, nice.
Shouting in his face.
Oh, Jerry Lawler. Excellent.
Ooh, nice jump over the top rope. Right, yeah, Bret's going after him. He's not going to last long, is he? Oh, what a lovely bump. Okay, get back.
Tremendous exit from the Rumble.
That was good. And he's hurt his eye.
Get straight back on commentary,
and this kid's habit is getting... Oh, he's getting...
And he finishes his sentence with, to know a king. Good stuff.
That's if you're going to have like a kind of a commentator spot in a Rumble, it probably should be something like that.
And at least it gets to carry on.
Did you just see someone just put up a sign that said Ariba Mil Mascaris, which is a shame because he's gone.
Yeah, they're a bit late with that one.
Yeah, 20 minutes ago.
What was that Rumble where Michael Cole was in it, or has he been in more
than
one?
Yeah, there's a couple. There's one where Michael Cole, Booker T and Jerry Lawler are all getting.
Yeah, I found that really upsetting that 10% of your entrance are the commentary team.
Yeah.
Well,
it was a hilarious joke, Adam.
No, it wasn't funny at all.
Well, it would have been more hilarious if the Spanish announcers all got in as well. And then the French announce team. Yeah.
And then the German.
It's a German announce team?
There's definitely been a German announce team.
Really? Yeah. How many German wrestlers have we had?
Oh, we've seen zero.
Well, there's that guy, isn't there, that's in Brawl for All.
Bracus. We've not seen him yet, though.
The European sensation.
Ah,
It's fake Diesel.
He's higher placed than Razor Ramon.
Certainly.
Unless he just gets in and gets his ass kicked immediately.
Maybe they should move with the times somewhat and think more about renewable fuels and go with biodiesel.
And then when he leaves, new biodiesel.
Mm-hmm. He's looking big,
To be fair, I think he looks in good shape.
Do you think he's got a more muscly physique than Kevin Nash had when he was in it?
Yes.
I think significantly.
He also does clotheslines off the top, which Kevin Nash never did.
Well, Well, maybe he did it all the time on house shows that we just never saw.
Yeah, he's really putting in the work ethic when the cameras weren't there.
He is doing the kind of all the Diesel moves, isn't he? He did it. Granted, doing a Razor character was a much harder role, but I think he's doing it. He's doing a decent
job. He does a
job.
Better job of Diesel than Rick Bogner does of Razor.
Yes.
But it's just a shame that they didn't have, like, because Rick Bogner looks quite a lot like
Razor.
Yeah.
Like a fat version of him.
Well, yeah, like a slightly more chubby face.
I almost thought, like, facially, to some extent, I don't know if it's, like, just a face hair thing, but there's almost, like, a hint of Sean Waltman's face in him.
Okay.
Mind you didn't think that the guy that I thought looked like Eddie Guerrero did look like Eddie Guerrero.
No, we did investigate that in our interval.
They just disagreed with me. Adam said maybe the facial hair slightly, but no.
I'll stick with it.
I just said no.
I think I've just got a talent for
seeing. Oh, my God, is it Terry Funk?
Yeah, and he gets no music and therefore no pop. Did they not, did they not watch Shotgun Saturday Night?
Well, they should have.
Well, evidently, no one did.
Maybe
they
might have watched the first episode and thought, what the hell's this?
Fuck that.
Never watched it again.
I do like his trunks.
He's just kind of strolling around Stone Cold. Obviously, he had that Barney with him, didn't he?
So on a random side note, are there any strong contenders for the name of Baby Scrivens the sequel?
No.
The sequel.
So you are open to bids?
It's more of a reboot than a sequel.
not bids, but if anybody's got any suggestions for names, then...
Well, have anyone in the ring at the minute? So Terry, Steve, Rhett, or Diesel?
That's a massive Tex for Terry. Yeah, there we go.
Yeah.
Glenn, Brett, Steve, and Terry. How about those?
That's quite good.
Not for a girl.
Terry.
Terry, yeah.
There you go.
You just change it to an I, yeah.
Yeah.
Glenda.
Propose that.
Brittany.
Brittany.
Brittany Scrivens.
Stephanie. Is that the feminine version of Stephen? Stephanie?
Stefan.
Can you have Stevie for a girl? I think
Stevie, yeah. Stevie Nicks from Fleetwood Mac. Sounds like a go.
We had an art teacher called Stevie, didn't we?
At
high school.
Oh, yeah.
Is she the attractive one? It was an attractive art teacher.
It's like that thing in the in-betweeners, isn't it? I put forward that she's not attractive. She's just the only woman working here that's under 30.
Oh, that is the worst part of life ever.
It's that blue-chipping Rocky Maivia.
It's The Rock.
Small reaction.
Any of the Rocky Sucks ones, or is this all quite positive?
But no, just a small reaction.
Okay, so a kind of murmur that runs through the crowd.
Oh,
so,
it's that guy.
So more like a lithium than a...
Stone Cold sold a punch from him really well.
So you got, like, if you think about it, like, in terms of, like, big names in a Royal Rumble...
Yeah, actually,
you've got Stone Cold Steve Austin, The Rock, Kane, Bret Hart and Terry Funk.
That's pretty high calibre, isn't
it? Yeah.
And, we've got The Rock against Stone Cold. That, to be fair, that's not bad.
That will go places.
Yeah, I could see it going places.
Don't eliminate Terry Funk.
What's he doing?
He just looks like a fish out of water. Literally, a fish out of water.
Or an old man in a wrestling ring.
Yeah, how old is Terry Funk at this point?
Old. He's quite pasty as well.
Has he done his first retirement yet?
He's done about 8 retirements. He retired in 1984.
Seriously?
Yes.
That's amazing. Is it beyond the mat where they're looking at Terry Funk?
Yeah.
And he's building up to his big retirement. It's kind of a nice moment.
That's 1997.
Yeah, and then he just doesn't retire.
Well, I think he does, but he's back about 3 months later.
that's not retiring.
Hmm. Is he actually retired now?
Sabbatical.
I think he still wrestles.
Wow.
He must be how old?
60 something.
Yeah.
Wow.
But the good thing is he's awesome, so it's fine.
Yes. I'm glad to see that Diesel's taken a bit more of a long run in it than Razor.
Yeah.
26 is Mankind, so you're adding Mankind onto the list of talent in the ring.
I've got to say, this feels like it's gone quite fast.
Yes. It doesn't feel like 90 seconds.
No.
I don't think it has been.
But this is good. This is some good wrestlers in here.
Yeah. Like, it's kind of the top tier of attitude, really, in the ring, isn't it?
Yeah. And Terry Funk.
And Terry Funk, who was Chainsaw Charlie, right?
Chainsaw Charlie.
When does he make that transition?
End of the year.
Okay, I'll look forward to that.
He's got an ECW title run before that.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Oh, Mankind nearly eliminates Terry Funk.
I think Barely Legal is our most requested non-WWF pay-per-view episode for 1997,
Mankind's really working on getting rid of Terry Funk. Mm. He's not having any of it.
Well... Just be glad they've not got out any panes of glass or exploding barbed wire or anything.
Oh, nice suplex there by Austin.
Is that the sort of move? Does he take that out of his repertoire once he gets the neck injury?
Austin.
Yeah. So anything that possibly has that impact on his neck is gone.
He's a very, very different wrestler after the neck injury.
Mm. He still keeps a lot of the stuff, though, doesn't he? Because, you know...
He relies more on sort of walk and brawl style stuff.
So on the floor punching and stomping sort of thing. But done with such charisma that it kind of works.
To be fair, I think it probably was quite fortuitous that they were going in that direction. Perhaps for him, because that sort of style very much...
Yeah.
I think it was such an integral part of Attitude.
Flash Funk wearing a lovely blue number.
Very baby bluish.
They've changed Flash Funk's theme tune, or they're playing it at 33 RPM.
What?
Lawler asks where the Funkettes are, and I just want to confirm that Terry Funk and Flash Funk are not related.
Well, Pile Driver,
that
Austin.
I know of. Yes.
Ooh. Nice.
Brett always did have a nice Pile Driver.
Well, all his moves are pretty good, aren't they? Mm. You don't look at a Brett like a Brett Hart move and say, well, he always does that one a bit of shit.
What is Flash Funk doing? He's going to do some...
Terry Funk's wandering around the ring.
Yeah. Flash Funk on the top. Oh, nice. Awesome dive onto Diesel and Terry Funk.
Yeah,
I do think it's kind of a shame with Too Cold Scorpio Flash Funk that he... Spoilers, never really goes anywhere.
Yeah, I think he's probably quite damaged by his outfit and persona that they've given him.
Yeah.
He could have been sold an awful lot better, because he is really good.
Something cooler.
Then you've got a baby blue jumpsuit and silly boots.
Those boots are very distinctive, aren't they, with those big knee things. Oh, what's that? It's Mankind's boot in Trey Funk's face.
That's going all right.
Number 28 on their way. 9, 8,
we're nearly there.
7, 6. Just want to let you all know I've been sitting on my foot for about the last 45 minutes and it's now completely dead.
Excellent.
Well, yeah. I don't know if I'd have got through this show without
that. Vader.
Okay.
Who does that leave for, like, number 30 then?
Undertaker.
Well, there's still a 29 as well.
Oh, shit, yeah.
Do you like it when guys pull double duty on Royal Rumble shows, or should people be in matches or the Rumble?
Depends on the strength of your roster.
I think that they can do. Like, I don't think everyone should. I think there's probably almost too many in this that are pulling double duty. But I think it makes sense at times to have more bigger names in.
Plus, you as a wrestler, would you not think, well, no, fuck, I don't want to do a match and the Rumble because I'm at a disadvantage to all the people who haven't had a match?
Would they get double pay for it?
Yeah, I presume so.
Yeah. It's Bob Vader kicks the shit out of Flash Funk there.
Then Austin's going after Vader.
Now, if anyone's suited to a Rumble match, I'd say Vader pretty much is, because he just batters people.
I really can't feel below the knee of my left leg.
Stamp on the floor.
He's trying to knock it gently on the sofa. Doesn't quite work. It's not really like tuning up the band.
This is the world's worst tuning up of the band.
You'll get awesome pins and needles in a minute.
I've got them already. Really hurts.
I'm quite tempted just to go over and just whack your leg.
Feel free. Like, I won't feel it.
Well, can I throw something like a biscuit at it?
No.
Okay. Can I have a biscuit?
Biscuits are messy.
No, because you chew too loudly.
Yeah, you do. You're too bloody noisy.
No one wants to listen to you chew.
3, 2, 1.
Adding to the massive list of talent in this match.
It's Henry Godwin.
Yeah, we like Henry Godwin.
We do.
Fine.
He's okay, but compare him to some of the other people in the ring.
Yeah. The Rock, Stone Cold. Henry Godwin.
Good comparison, well made.
Doesn't he main event Mania at some point?
Yeah.
He's still good.
Probably this one if the rest of the roster goes down injured, yeah.
Yeah.
He is a big, big man.
Is he one of Doc Hendrick's 10 picks?
I don't know. I didn't catch who the 10 were, but they did mention on commentary that Pieroff was one of them.
Okay. This guy that nobody's... heard of in this company.
Mm. He properly whacked Vader with the clothesline. That might come back to get him.
It seems like there's quite a lot going on here now. It's just all over the place.
Quite a few guys in there.
Yeah, but I mean, there's no real weak links in there, is there? They're all pretty good.
Who are you fancying at this stage?
Flash Funk.
You had to pick the pimp character, didn't you?
I think really, like, as a legit winner, it's going to have to be Brett or Austin, hasn't it? Probably Austin.
Yeah, I've never heard of Henry Godwin's fantastic Royal Rumble victory. So.
I mean, I guess...
It really made him.
I guess The Undertaker's going to be the last entrant then.
See, well, see
they
what
said
you're
joined, they said it during the match, didn't they, that he was going to be in it?
Aldo Montoya.
If they weren't too injured. And he didn't look too injured.
but he was whacking referees with chokeslams.
Oh, that's a massive reaction.
Yeah, it's gone all dark. Will the lights come back on? Like there'll be like two people left in the room.
Well, Lawler does suggest the whole Royal Rumble should have been held in the dark. I'm not entirely sure what he thinks that would achieve.
Entertainment value would be low for that.
Zero.
So it is the Undertaker. He's looking quite menacing. He's walking slowly but purposefully towards the ring.
Does this change your prediction for the winner, or are you still going with Flash Funk?
Sticking with the Funk.
Anyone called Funk or particularly Flash?
I want
to... Funk Austin.
Yeah, Flash Funk Steve Austin.
Stone Funk Steve Austin.
What do you think giving Steve Austin the Flash Funk gimmick?
Or what about Funk Kind?
Well, he's having a bit
Henry
of a go.
Funkin. The Underfunker.
Big Daddy Funk.
Yeah. All sorts of... The Funk. Hillbilly Funk.
Well, I think we beat that joke into the ground.
Yeah, he's going to chokeslam Austin.
Yeah, oh, that's a good one.
Very nice.
I've got to say, the chokeslam that he did on the ref, I thought was a little bit underwhelming.
Chokeslam of the night for Vader. That was a good
chokeslam. Yeah, people are liking this a lot more than the Undertaker-Vader match earlier on.
I think, obviously, he's choked someone on the ref. The ref isn't a wrestler. You've got to be a bit more gentle with them so you don't kill them.
Yes. I don't know, like...
Like as gentle as Giant Gonzalez was with Harvey Whippleman.
But the thing is, sometimes you get, like, the refs, and they do, like, the chokeslam or whatever on them, and they do some, like, big chokeslams or...
Yeah. And Charles Robinson always takes a good bump, doesn't he? Flash Funk's going to eliminate Vader.
How much legitimate training...
Oh, no.
Do you think that some of the refs get? Does someone actually get? Wow. Okay, that's worth talking about.
It gets gasps from the crowd.
Put it that just way. Fall away slams. Flash Funk over the top rope.
But like, you know the fall away slam where you know you fall backwards with them. But he's just like leant backwards and lobbed him.
Stiff. Okay, very stiff.
I want to see more of this acting by Terry Funk because he's all over the place.
Bastard. Wow. Well done, Vader. Yeah. Well done.
Well done, Flash Funk.
Yeah. I'm not sure entirely he had a choice.
Yeah, but I'm not sure people are going to queue up to take that bump.
No.
To be honest, this...
Terry Funk probably will.
Yeah, probably kill him.
There was a camera shot just then which looked for not like the first time that Austin and Brett were having a protracted conversation.
just catching up.
It's not the way that Terry Funk's been in there for quite a while.
Yeah. I wonder if they're just talking about, you know, mortgage rates, you know, current affairs.
Henry Godwin's lost a dungaree shoulder strap, yeah.
Yeah.
Mankind pounding away on Fake Diesel there.
Yeah.
And what's Vader doing?
So Flash Funk's gone, mate. Who's your pick?
Make up your mind. Seriously, it's painful.
Okay. It's Austin.
So you're both going with Austin.
It's the logical pick. Like, I don't see Brett winning it would do. I
deliberately avoided anything that would tell me who the winner of this was.
Good.
Yeah, I legitimately don't know.
I stopped the main event right after
at the
it
video
finished
package,
it. Yeah. So that I wouldn't get any like highlights of anyone winning. But as far as Royal Rumbles go, I think this started off a bit lukewarm, obviously with Crush. But it's been pretty good.
So your prediction of him making it sort of all the way through was not quite accurate.
Well, it's nearly there, but yeah, it just fell short.
Yeah. It's always quite good fun to make silly predictions in the Royal Rumble.
If it wasn't for that pesky Phineas Godwin.
Did you see Henry Godwin staying in? I thought it was a goner then.
Who do you fancy for this year's Rumble, being that Reigns is defending his title in it?
Well, that's just such a fucking stupid idea. Yeah.
So it's like, what? No, talk me through that. What's happening?
That's the thing that's happening.
Whoever wins the Royal Rumble wins the title.
Seriously, so...
Which is a fine thing to do if you've got a vacant title. But when you've got it on someone, that's not a good idea.
So there's not a rumble and like a title match. There is just that is the title match.
Yeah.
Oh my god! What are they thinking? What is wrestling thinking?
Is this just a panic thing as they've lost loads of people?
Mm. But like,
how do you fill out the rest of the card?
That's what I was thinking. Like, it's not like, well, are they going to get some NXT guys to go and put a couple of matches on to bolster the undercard?
No.
They should.
Everyone chanted Royal Rumble at AJ Styles last night as well.
Did they? Okay. Because he's now going to NXT. Is that right?
Well, no one really knows as of yet which one.
Oh! Vicious exit.
They play dominoes together as well. That's not on.
What?
Is he a BS?
He's BSK Henry he's Godwin.
Well, he just got lifted up by his neck and thrown over the top rope.
Maybe.
There's been some painful looking exits in this Rumble.
Yeah, this looks fairly severe. But like maybe The Undertaker had lost and he didn't think he should. So maybe like one of the other competitors was just ruining his strategy.
Hey up. You said strategy.
Okay.
Mike.
Yeah, but maybe one of the other players, maybe it was almost like a game of Monopoly where somebody says, what I'm going to do is I'm going to make it look good thing for you, but it not be.
Oh, Rocky jumped into a mandible claw. That's interesting.
That was quite cool.
Try Prodigy.
Prodigy.
There you go.
Has anyone been, for the last like minute, Vader's just been kicking the shit out of Diesel.
Oh, that's good. Like Terry Funk
got his head trapped in the ropes again or something.
Strong final six.
If
you put a big red suit on Fake Diesel, definitely a strong last six.
Well, what's going to happen? I reckon Mankind's going to go out here. They're both going to go.
Yeah.
Both stay. No, they're both going to go. I'm sure. No, they're both.
Maybe that was the intention, but Terry Funk just went back inside.
Probably. Yeah.
He's going to suplex to the outside. This isn't going to be.
This is going to be upsetting, isn't it?
Oh, come on.
He's an old man.
Don't do
Let's
it, guys.
Do that. Suplex out of the ring.
Yeah, it wasn't quite kind of the ferocity of suplex I was expecting, to be fair.
Well, it's a pretty bad bump for like a 50-year-old or something.
I'm not 50 and I wouldn't want to take it. I'm level with you.
Oh, take his booted Mankind gone? Out.
Oh, it's Mankind gone.
So your final...
Five. We must have said final six when it was final seven.
That's some terrible wrestle maths.
That is some bad wrestle maths, but sometimes you just can't see. Who are they applauding there?
So Mankind and Terry Funk are just going to batter each other.
Oh, Vladimir's
on the
in the front row as well.
Vader having a go at Taker.
Mankind wants back in.
Yeah.
He doesn't quite understand.
The refs are...
I've got to be honest, I've been really impressed by Glenn Jacobs running this.
Mm.
Saddled with something bad, but he's kind of making the most of it.
Austin's gone.
He's gone.
Big pop for that.
Because are they still not like him? Or is Brett Two-Face? Not Two-Face, but is he Two-Face?
So just...
Just come back in, why don't you? Yeah.
So Brett eliminates Austin, gone. So in reaction he eliminates Vader and The Undertaker.
And... Okay. That's confusing. Gosh, that last five or six is just gone. Right, so Austin's won. Even though he's been out.
What's going on?
They were busy with Terry Funk and Mankind, weren't they?
Oh no. And because the referees didn't see it, that means the whole match has changed. Where's Gorilla Monsoon? What's happening? This is a travesty.
Is there no replays that they can look at?
No, they're too busy interviewing young women in the crowd.
Yeah, video evidence doesn't exist in the world of wrestling.
Brett is not happy.
He's pissed.
Brett is having some referees.
He's got a point.
Yes, yeah, he's got a very good point. He's just been screwed.
See, I'm liking this kind of angry, ferocious Brett. I'm liking this.
Yeah, Austin's just wandering off. R1.
Well, that last, you know, four or five people just went. Well,
Brett's legitimately going apeshit at that ref.
The referee's just like, I'm off.
Oh.
He looks legitimately devastated. Yeah. That is, I tell you what, that is some fine characterisation there.
I didn't see that happening. I've never read about this.
He looks as angry as me after
that
Monopoly.
He's also pissed at Vince.
Yeah, he's having a go at Vince.
This is totally you after that game of Monopoly, or in fact, during it.
Yeah. Yeah, I was a bit.
Lawler's kind of trying to use his crown as a barrier.
Yeah, so this is Brett having a go at Vince. So I haven't seen the Montreal Screwjob other than like the last few seconds on some footage, but it kind of reminds me of that a bit.
It's very much a real version of this.
Yeah.
JR's trying to
calm things down.
Pacify him, I think.
The win gets a mixed reaction, and Vince describes Brett's conduct as unsportsmanlike, with JR stressing that the referees didn't see Austin's elimination.
Well, to be honest, I thought overall that was a very good Royal Rumble.
Yeah, I really quite enjoy that. Is he yelling at the crowd now? Mm.
So Austin wins the match at 50-29. Following Austin's elimination of Brett, he eliminated 10 people in the match, giving him, at the time, the all-time record.
Really?
This performance currently sits in third, behind Roman Reigns in 2014 and Kane in 2001. However, this does give Austin the award for most eliminations for the actual winner of the Rumble, as neither Reigns nor Kane won the match they completed their most eliminations in. It is also the only win to date from the number five position.
Okay.
Austin was also the Iron Man in this Rumble, lasting 45.07, which at the time was second only to Ric Flair in terms of longest stint by a winner. Yeah. And it currently sits sixth overall.
Wow. Good run. Yeah.
I've got to say, Austin was good in it. There was a few good performances in that, I thought.
So what did you make to it overall?
I liked it. As a Rumble match, I quite liked it. I think it started off, like I said, a bit ropey, but I think you can afford to do that with a Rumble match where you've got so many people to use and so many things to do. I think the end of it, it was such a strong crop of people that stayed in there for a good amount of time and put on some, you know, really good action. I thought Vader was really good in it. Like he was constantly looked like a menacing threat throughout it. Undertaker coming out had a big reaction. And you've got, you know, obviously Terry Funk and Mankind. Good effort. And I'll say it again, but I think you know, Glenn Jacobs did a good job for his part, for what he's got to do and how long he's got to be in. I thought he was actually putting a decent performance.
Yeah, I thought pretty much everybody from kind of in the last perhaps 10 entrants and a few before that put in a good show.
Hmm.
And, you know, that's one of the most engaging Royal Rumbles I think I've watched.
Okay.
You know, possibly, you know, when I think back to some of those ones kind of attitude era-ish when I was kind of watching it, you know, live, you know, when I'm kind of just gripped by the product at the time.
Yeah.
Slightly different feeling to what going back and watching stuff that you know's already happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought this was really good. I thought it was a really strong show.
Despite the lack of build for the match, there's actually a pretty big amount of star power combined within. So certainly from a historical perspective. So Bret Hart, Steve Austin, The Rock, Triple H, The Undertaker, Mick Foley, Vader, Terry Funk, The British Bulldog, Owen Hart, Jerry Lawler and Kane, in a way,
yeah,
all feature, and it's the only Rumble bout to feature the Attitude Era sort of big four of Austin, The Rock, Foley and Triple H.
Yeah.
Because they're always busy with title defenses.
Yeah, someone's always in a title match or something, or someone's injured or something different. But, yeah, it's decent enough, but I think it relies quite heavily on that final third.
Yeah, it does.
And Austin is left to carry quite a lot of the early stuff, and there is a lot of dross.
Yes.
There is a lot of
drama. But I say, with a Rumble match, you can do things shaky in the start if you have a big finish to it, I think. And it doesn't necessarily mean like the last 30 seconds got to be really good, but there's definitely a good sort of like 10, 15 minutes at the end that was very good, I thought.
Plus, Ahmed Johnson comes out with a massive plank of wood.
Does that win award for biggest plank ever used in wrestling?
He wins the award for biggest plank.
Bad attitude. For Psycho Sid, it's second nature. For Shawn Michaels, bad attitude comes from being provoked.
I am not intimidated by nothing.
I'm going to do what I want, when I want.
Because I am the super predator of the World Wrestling Federation.
It's going to take more than being a man to beat me.
See the game I play. I am the master.
At the Survivor Series, Sid's game was to attack Shawn's 62-year-old mentor. Shawn Michaels acted on instinct, the honor of friendship over the glory of a title. Sid acted on a killer instinct. The Psycho Era had begun.
What's done is done. I can be the WWF champion again. This is something that cannot ever, ever be replaced.
From Psycho Sid, no sympathy, no apology.
You put your ass on the apron and then you retain part of the game.
The following day, the WWF made the official announcement. The 1997 Royal Rumble would be at the Alamo Dome in Shawn Michaels' hometown, San Antonio, Texas.
March 31st was a great day for me, but one thing that would be more special than that would be to win the World Wrestling Federation Championship in the town that I live in.
The young man who trained in a tin shack just outside San Antonio was returning home to fight in front of 70,000 friends, fans, and family.
Sid, you're what I want next. In my hometown, myself and all the people of San Antonio will tear you apart.
The day I was born the man!
The verbal and physical assault escalated.
I am 6'9" and over 300 pounds!
There's going to be 71,000 kids to see me kick your 6'9", 300-pound teeth down your stinking throat.
For Sid, nothing was sacred, not even Jose Lothario's 19-year-old son.
I want to apologize for what I'm going to do.
The monster has been unleashed. But is the monster Shawn Michaels or Psycho Sid?
Well, we are about to find out as this huge mammoth crowd, over 60,000, ladies and gentlemen, in the Alamo Dome, And earlier today, JR had an occasion on WWF Superstars to speak to a flu-ridden, a weakened Shawn Michaels.
Well, on one hand, I want to say I'm wonderfully excited. On the other hand, I want to tell you that I'm extremely nervous. I don't want this flu to be any excuse to anybody, because it doesn't matter how I feel right now. When it comes to crunch time, Shawn Michaels will be ready. Now let's talk about how Sid reacts to being threatened. He attacked a 62-year-old man, a man that means a great deal to me, a man that means more to me than anybody else in this world, with the exception of my mother and my father. And then when Pete Lothario stuck up for his father just by mentioning the fact that if psycho should get out of line, he felt like he had to do something, and then Sid attacked him. So we know how Sid reacts to being threatened. He snaps just like that. Well, Sid, I want you to think about something. You're going to be threatened by 71,000 screaming San Antonians, and you're going to be even more threatened by a guy across the ring from you by the name of Shawn Michaels. I don't feel well, I don't look well, but believe me, Sid, I'm going to be good enough, and I'm going to be better than you come tonight. So how am I going to feel come crunch time? I'm going to feel like the Heartbreak Kid. I'm going to feel like San Antonio's own. I'm going to feel like the man that can bring Psycho Sid down. I'm going to feel like the World Wrestling Federation champion when all this is over with, whether you like it or not.
A video package hypes Shawn versus Sid, and it's centered around bad attitude. Shawn chose the honor of friendship over the glory of a title. Shawn says winning the title in his hometown would be more special than winning the title at WrestleMania 12. And apparently Pete Lothario is 19 years old here. He looks way older.
Yeah. He looks about 30.
Yeah.
And so it focuses on Sid's bad attitude.
Yes.
Rather than the actual story of Shawn's bad attitude.
Yes.
Okay.
I would say the opening video package was stronger than this one, I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Vince acknowledges that Shawn is flu-ridden and weakened. True story in this case. He does actually have the flu.
He's actually ill.
Yeah. He may be on drugs, but this time it's Night Nurse or Benylin or something to that effect.
Fair enough.
Yeah. JR interviews poorly Shawn, who says that Jose means more to him than anyone other than his mother and father. Shawn says, come showtime, he'll feel like the Heartbreak Kid.
More than Sonny?
Yes, because I don't think she actually meant that much to him.
Okay. Does Jose mean that much to him?
No.
We've not really seen any evidence of it.
No, we haven't.
I thought he did like a fairly decent little promo here.
Yeah, it's all right.
Quite sincere, probably right thing for the crowd before this match.
It's time for our main event of Psycho Sid versus Shawn Michaels for the WWF World title. Following the main event of In Your House, It's Time, Bret Hart opened the December 16th Raw with an impromptu interview lamenting the changing landscape and what he felt were a lack of rules in the WWF. Probably feels even more that way now.
Mm. Yeah.
He went on to call Shawn Michaels a little prissy and called out Shawn on vowing not to interfere in his match the previous evening, claiming that Michaels was bitter that he was not as good as the Hitman. Sid would be interviewed later in the same broadcast, with Vince McMahon referencing Sid facing Shawn Michaels in his own backyard. Sid was apparently not too concerned with this. Sid would also urge Jose Lothario to stay at home rather than appear in Shawn Michaels' corner. Shawn would then be interviewed also, behaving even more like a cunt than usual. Shawn would claim that he didn't have a problem with Sid beating him for the WWF title. His problem was with Sid's attack on Jose. Shawn would also tell us that he was not a whiner like Bret Hart. On the following week's December 23rd Raw, Vince McMahon would conduct an in-ring interview with Sid, where, bizarrely, they continued to play Sid's music throughout it.
Hmm. I like Sid's music.
I do, but I'm sure it gets in the way of trying to talk.
Well, they toned it down a little bit.
Okay.
But, yeah. Sid did some shouting and whispering as Shawn Michaels watched on from backstage, wearing a baseball cap backwards. Shawn would also offer his comments on Bret Hart's main event match against fake Razor Ramon on the same night, before again acting like a complete dickhead. The biggest segment on the final Raw of 1996 on December 30th would be a face-to-face confrontation between Michaels and Hart, hyped with a promo at the start of the show, which may very well be the first time that Shawn referred to himself as a degenerate.
Mm.
It's not a term I'd heard him use before. Both Hart and Michaels would use the interview time, chaired by Jim Ross, to take pot shots at each other. Hart would claim that Michaels hadn't carried the WWF title with the same dignity and respect that he had, and then taunt Shawn for having posed for Playgirl, speculating that it wasn't, in fact, women that bought the magazine. Shawn would retort, claiming that Bret needed to stop with the role model stuff, as he'd seen Bret on the road, and he was not a role model. Sid would join the fray by screaming into JR's microphone. Genuinely how he interrupts. And reminding everybody that he had beaten both Bret and Shawn in the previous month. He would demand real competition, causing the Undertaker's gong to hit and Taker to begin strolling towards the ring and going face to face with Sid before Vader could attack the dead man. In the ring, Sean would cheap shot Brett from behind before launching himself at Sid over the top rope, with the two brawling to the back as the segment ended. This really was a fantastic segment and is well worth checking out if you've not seen it.
Okay.
You think about that for kind of a main event scene, Brett, Sean, Sid, Vader, Undertaker.
Yeah.
And then you
You
add Mankind and Austin to the sort of periphery of it, and like you would take those as your top six guys kind of any day of the week, really, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
On the January the 6th Raw, Shawn Michaels appeared backstage with a recovered Jose Lothario and his son Pete, who put on an equally stellar acting performance to his debut at Survivor Series. Vince quizzed Shawn as to whether he would be joining them for commentary on the show's Bret Hart-Vader main event, with Michaels assuring us that he would be. Before that match could happen, Sid would cut another promo hyping his match with Shawn, with his music playing in the background again, so I guess that's kind of his thing now.
A bit weird.
Sean's music would cut off the end of Sid's promo as he made his entrance to commentate on the main event, with Jose Lothario heading to the Spanish announce table to do the same. A laughing Sid would apologise to Sean for what he was about to do as he left ringside. With Vader and Brett brawling on the outside, Sid would march back to ringside and grab a cameraman to follow him. After the conclusion of the match, we would cut backstage where Sid had Pete Lothario by the throat. As Sean legged it backstage, Sid would powerbomb Pete onto one of those really sturdy tables that don't break when you powerbomb someone through them. Sean was very upset by this, and FYI, this scene also featured a masked Aldo Montoya wearing a suit jacket.
Nice.
Brilliant. You saw this segment.
I saw this bit. It looks a bit strange. It's a man in a suit with a yellow partial face mask thing on. It's weird.
As we saw on Shotgun Saturday Night on the Go Home 13th of January Raw, Sid cut his brilliant Friedrich Nietzsche promo, followed by a retort from a totally unconcerned-looking Shawn Michaels, live from San Antonio. Shawn said that Sid had bought the monster out of him. He did address Sid taking out his wrath on the Lothario family, but seemed more concerned with telling Vince that he had been the one carrying the company for the last 2 years. The build for this one has been weird, to say the least, for a couple of reasons. Firstly, for the most part, the focus seemed to be on Brett versus Sean until about 2 weeks before, when they realised they needed to get some heat on Sid versus Sean. Mm. And kind of secondly, considering they plan on filling the Alamo Dome based on hometown hero babyface Shawn Michaels, he's been an absolute insufferable dickhead on television the entire month.
I guess that's nothing that you can really help at this time.
Yeah, like, I get that they're going for more of the shades of grey with everybody, but if you want to present him as the hometown conquering babyface hero, like, he's just been, like, so punchable, well, like, the last month.
At this point, would Sean do anything other than what he wanted to do?
Well, probably not.
So
then it'll get worse.
Can't wait to see that.
We get a backstage shot of Sean and Jose Lothario walking towards the ring. Sean's outfit is certainly one of his most interesting.
Well, I've put the note, there's a local mirror salesman that's having a good holiday this year.
It's mildly cretinous. It's
definitely not sports casual.
It's the sleeves and neck of a jumper.
Made of mirrors.
Made of mirrors.
Yeah. But with no other parts of the jumper.
Yes.
It is sleeves and a neck.
Yeah, it's a bit wankerish.
To be honest, I quite like it.
You should get it.
Yeah. Wear it often.
Can see you in the delivery room there.
Yeah.
You could do a proper entrance to Sexy Boy.
To be honest, I think if there's one place where you don't want lots of mirrors, though, it's a delivery room.
Thankfully, I've never been in one.
Yeah, if there's one place that I would never want to be ever, it's a delivery room. It should be like just an old 1950s dad who'd smoke a pipe out in the corridor.
I've not got a pipe.
Or go to the pub and drink mild until someone gives you a call saying what gender the baby is.
It's a Scrivens.
Yeah, I just don't think...
Is that a gender?
Yes, it is now.
I just don't think there's a benefit to being in the delivery room. You got to pick an end to be at, and you get screamed at from one, and, well, you know what's at the other.
When Sean first appears on camera, we get girly screams. Lots of them.
He does have a small army of teenage girls, I think.
Is it that one that saved up all the babysitting money?
Possibly.
How much does she get paid as a babysitter to travel all around the country and follow
Sean? Well, tickets were only $10, so she didn't have to work that hard.
She did like one evening.
His music hitting gets the biggest pop of the night. This crowd is here to see Sean, especially the women.
Mm.
I was actually surprised to see him come out first, even though Sid is the champion. They've always been happy to sort of reverse that tradition when the challenger is the bigger star, but they've had him come out first.
Yeah, the champion should always come out second.
Sean has a big heart-shaped Texan flag on his crotch. Discuss.
Subtext there. He loves Texas with his penis.
What would you say about it?
I just thought I'd let you two go to town.
But he's also got it in all the little hearts, hasn't he?
Yes.
On his gear. To be fair, I thought his tights looked pretty good.
His entrance is so long, his music loops.
Yes.
It just always does. He should have really had longer music.
Big boos when we get the first camera shot of Sid walking backstage.
Oh, I love this camera shot of Sid walking backstage.
I was kind of hoping, like, I don't necessarily always hope that things will go wrong on shows, but I was kind of hoping he'd take, like, a wrong turn somewhere and not make it to the gorilla position.
Like Mero and Sable.
In retrospect, I would really liked it for Armour Johnson to be looking, walking around confused with his plank still trying.
Sid does get a few fist bumps on his way to the ring. Sid tells us he smells a powerbomb on the way to the ring. Mm-hmm. Some more big boos when Sid poses on the apron, and his big fiery name looks bigger than ever here.
Yeah,
that would have looked cool.
Sid and Sean square off in the middle of the ring before Sid pushes Sean down. Sean smiles when he gets back up, and same again a second time.
And I tell you what, already the crowd are all over this. That they are kind of, they've woken.
Sid hits fists and whips Sean to the ropes. Sean ducks a clothesline and hits a crossbody before grabbing Sid by the head on the mat. Sean kicks Sid to the outside to a huge reaction. Sid has a lay down on the outside as Sean urges Earl Hebner not to count. Sean follows and picks Sid up. Sid goes for a punch, but Sean blocks it and rams Sid into the guardrail before Sid whips Sean onto the edge of the ring. Sid looks for a gorilla press, but Sean rakes Sid's eyes before Sid can drop him.
That was quite cool.
Yeah, it was like a face rake.
Back in the ring, Sean goes to the top and dives at Sid, who catches Sean sloppily and power slams him for a two count. That's in the third time
at
that spot. Yeah.
And the thing is, I think it's degraded each time because the first one was the best.
And this is the point as well where the woman whistling in the crowd like almost made this match unwatchable for me with sound. Like it was almost at the point of just muting it.
I didn't think the audio was great for not necessarily all of the show, but there's parts of the show where the audio is decidedly patchy.
We get a shot of Pete Lothario in the crowd as Sid applies a camel clutch. Sid lets go and poses to huge heat before reapplying the hold and doing that thing where he looks concerned from side to side. I'm having horrible flashbacks to 1995, Sid.
Yeah, I think that it was shortly into this match where I just had the thought, I don't know, Sid's kind of done. Super Sid, is he gone now? Are we back to old Sid?
You'll have to find out.
Yeah.
Sid focuses his attack on Sean's lower back as JR lets us know that this will be the last time that Jose Lothario will be accompanying Sean to the ring, so the bout has extra meaning for them.
Does he mention why?
Time? It's run its course, hasn't it?
Well, it has, but...
I think it never had a course.
Yeah, it ran its course at WrestleMania 12, but are you happy to see him go? Do you wish he'd stick around?
I'm happy to see him go, probably for him. I don't think it's probably very pleasant for him. All he does is hang around with Sean and get ignored by him or hit with a camera.
But like, that's the thing. I think that would have been the logical point to have written him off and say, you know, use him in the build-up, but say, I'm not going to come out with Sean anymore because bad things happen and bad things up. Just that would have been a better point.
Yeah,
to cut
but
to.
I guess given the result of the match, like, this is kind of fairy tale ending. He gets to be there when Sean wins the title back.
Yeah.
I reckon he could jump over a barricade and get into the crowd. I don't think he needed to be there. But well, not jump over, he could have got a stair lift over, I don't know. But I think, you know, I'm glad that he's been his manager for a while, and to get, you know, the sexy boy Jose Lothario coming out to Sean's music has been brilliant.
Yeah, that was a personal favourite moment.
Sid applies the camel clutch for a third time, but Sean frees his arms and moves when Sid looks to drop on him. Sean gets a boot up on a Sid charge in the corner before Sid whips Sean into the corner where he takes his trademark bump to the outside. Sid follows and rams Sean's lower back into the corner post before bringing Sean back inside. Sid covers for a two. Sid clubs Sean in the back of the head and applies a chin lock with a knee to the upper spine. More head side-to-side shenanigans from Sid. Sean gets to his feet but walks straight into a big clothesline from Sid, which gets big boos.
That clothesline was fierce.
That was probably my favourite point of the match, that clothesline.
Yeah, awesome.
Well, there's been a few times where they talk about Sid doing basic moves.
Yes.
And just thinking, I know what you're trying to say, but you're just making your champion sound rubbish.
Yes.
Yeah. And therefore devaluing your entire company in a statement. That's kind of...
Yes, yeah. It's basically saying he's limited.
Yeah.
Which we know.
Yeah.
But there presumably would be a better way of putting that across.
Well, you can say that, you know, you've got a smaller challenger who is more agile, more this, more that, more tenacious than the champion. That's fine. That makes your challenger sound really good. But just to say your champion just can't do this and can't do that, I don't think it's a good way of doing it.
Sid gets a two from the clothesline. Sid whips Sean into the buckle on opposite sides of the ring and applies a bear hug. JR talks about Sid, yes, keeping everything within his skill level.
Mm.
It has... It's, slowed the pace of the match considerably. So the multiple camel clutches and now the bear hugs. It's not as quick as it should be now. I don't know whether that's because obviously you do have to work within the limitations of Sid, but we know that Sid can also work well. It is within his range. And also that Sean's kind of feeling under the weather, so they can't do too much.
Sean eventually breaks the hold as we see Sean's mum and dad looking bored in the crowd. Sid reapplies the hold and we see mum again, and this time she looks a little concerned.
I like the fact that Jerry Lawler doesn't rip on his parents.
Probably because he realises Sean might actually just hit him backstage. Sean eventually gets an atomic drop to get Sid off of him and looks to dive at Sid from the second rope, but gets caught in another bear hug. Pete Lothario cheers on from ringside. Sid covers from the bear hug for a two before hitting a big leg drop for another two.
Is that where he does the bear hug and he kind of ragdolls him a bit when he...
Yeah, that was good.
That's much better. That's how Sid should apply a bear hug because he's huge and Sean's significantly smaller.
That looked vicious.
But yeah, the stationary bear hugs just makes me think of Earthquake Hulk Hogan for some reason. I've got vague memories of just like a bear hugs that go on for 10 minutes at a time with Earthquake very just loosely hugging Hulk Hogan. Terrible.
Sid applies a chin lock, but Sean gets back to his feet. Sid looks for a scoop slam, but Sean slips out, gets some punches, and slams Sid to a big pop. Sean gets his flying forearm and kips up. He heads to the top rope and hits his big elbow before signalling it's time for sweet chin music.
I think he slammed Sid a bit easily.
Yeah.
I think it should be sold as a bigger event.
Yeah, he should have had more trouble doing it.
So much more massive than him.
Sid catches Sean's boot and looks for a clothesline, but Sean ducks. Sean charges Sid, but Sid backdrops him to the outside. Sid looks for the powerbomb on the mats and hits it relatively gently to booze.
Yeah. I thought that was okay, though.
It was done all right, but it was done as not to kill him.
Sid grabs Jose Lothario by the neck, followed by Pete, who has just jumped the barrier as Lawler shrieks on commentary.
Now, that might be my favourite moment of the match, actually. I think it's just an awesome image of Sid grabbing the two of them by the neck like he's going to chokeslam the both of them. Thought that looked really cool.
Pat Patterson tries to stop Sid, but Sid just lets go to deal with Sean, who gets to his feet. In the ring, Sid whips Sean into Earl Hebner and hits a chokeslam, covering for the three, but there's no referee.
So he's technically won.
When a second one runs in, Sean kicks out before the three. Sid punches at Sean in the corner before decking the new referee, who rolls to the outside.
I've written slithers. I thought it's kind of serpentine.
Jose gets up on the apron and Sid goes to square off with him. Sean grabs a cameraman's camera and clocks Sid with it from behind before hitting him again.
And then just chucking it on the floor. Mm. They're really expensive.
Sean covers and Earl Hebner wearily comes back to life. One. Two.
Two.
But Sid kicks out.
Big pop.
Yeah.
Sean tunes up the band once more, this time connecting to a massive pop. Sean covers again and gets the three at 13:49 to capture the WWF title for a second time. The crowd pops and Sean's mum claps along. Jose enters the ring and Sean and he hug as Sean is presented with the belt. Pete Lothario is pleased also. Sean does look knackered post-match and bows down to the crowd in the ring. He poses on the corners as Vince references the new WWF generation, which is a term I can't remember having heard in a while.
Mm.
Sean hugs his parents and nieces and nephews, climbing over Vince's chair. Sign in the crowd, Sean, keep your pants on.
And he wiggles his bottom in Vince's face.
Yeah, Sean dances, wiggling his ass in Vince's face. And Sean smiles. It's a lovely image. Remember it. Replays show us the finish as Sean's music loops for about the eighth time and he wanders around ringside. A video package ends the show. Thoughts on that one?
Not bad. Briefer than what I expected from the match. Certainly not the best. I don't think, and there is a couple of reasons for that, and I think the main one's got to be that Sean just ain't feeling well, so he can't carry as much, as it were, and I think, you know, Sid can be good, but normally it takes someone to help him carry it along.
Yes, I think you're right there. It felt more like a Sid-led match, which isn't going to yield such good results. It was okay. It wasn't an abomination of a main event, but it wasn't up to their previous standard.
Yeah, I think massively disappointing considering what their match at Survivor Series was. But yeah, I don't know how much of it you can put down to Sean being ill, but it is what it is.
Yeah.
Still got good reactions from the crowd.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, like we say, a lot of people are there to see Sean win the title and that's the story they're going to tell.
Doesn't really fit with the sort of babyface persona that they've been putting out there.
No.
The way that Sid had the match won, really, from the chokeslam, and then Sean uses the camera to beat Sid.
But that's like a visual win for Sid, isn't it? So he doesn't lose insofar as we've seen he can beat Sean.
Yeah.
And you've got a visual reminder of that, but ultimately, he loses.
And we got the kind of the symmetry of Sid used the camera, Sean used the camera.
See, that's my kind of final note on the whole thing is I'm not entirely sure whether that's a nice callback to the original title change or if it was cheesy. I don't think I've quite made up my mind.
I didn't mind it. I felt my only problem with it is, you know, you've got the babyface cheating. But I felt in this case he could feel justified in doing that with the emotional ties that they've linked in with Jose and whatever his son's called.
Pete,
yeah.
Overall thoughts on the show then?
Not great, but I wouldn't say appalling. You know, I actually quite liked the Rumble match. I thought this event was okay. I thought that the Vader-Taker match was okay. And I think I liked the opening match a lot more than you two probably did. It did have that Mexican match. That was a problem.
I thought the undercard was below average. The Royal Rumble itself was above average. And the main event was average.
So does that average it out at average?
Kind of balanced.
I think overall, but I mean, the thing that you watch a Royal Rumble for is the Rumble itself normally.
Yes.
And that being above average does help significantly. So yeah, that was how I feel.
A phrase that often comes up when this show is discussed is that it's a case of an arena needing a show rather than a show that needing an arena. Kind of what do you glean from that in terms of, they kind of booked themselves somewhere way bigger than they actually needed for the card they have and the stories they had.
They bit off more than they could chew.
Yeah, and the show that the arena got was not up to the level that would elicit great reactions from a crowd that size.
I think that phrase perfectly fits this, yes.
Yeah, I mean, overall, I think I'd kind of go with it as a slightly below average show. Like I say, the undercard, I did want to like some of the matches, and that, like I said, that might be down to the length of time since we've covered one of these shows like this, so I kind of wanted them to be good. And as a rule, I like Royal Rumble pay-per-views because I like Royal Rumbles. But, yeah, I think most of the matches sort of came under the should-have-been-better category, which I think I brought up earlier. I mean, we did get to see Mr. Hughes again, so, you know, that was a massive bonus.
Yeah, that is pretty good.
That Mexican six-man tag is just absolutely awful, and especially when you compare it to the matches featuring Mexican wrestlers we've seen in WCW, it's, you know,
embarrassingly bad.
Embarrassingly bad compared to a, you know, Rey Super Calo or a Rey Juventud or a Psicosis Super Calo or, you know, anything like that. So that was disappointing, and I think the Royal Rumble's decent. It's not actually that highly regarded in terms of overall Royal Rumble matches itself.
That surprises me.
And I think it's down to there is a lot of dross in there.
I don't know. I think if I look back, so I don't really ever particularly remember the starts of any Royal Rumbles. It's never the starts that I'm looking for. You know that it's, for the most part, Royal Rumbles are going to be slow burners by their very nature. And, I do think it's one of the better ones I've seen.
I liked it, as I've stated. And, yeah, there is dross in it, but it's dross that doesn't hang around. It's dross that comes in and then leaves. And you're actually left with the better stuff.
Match of the night at MVP, then?
I'll go for the Rumble match itself. From that, I'd say Stone Cold for putting in a sterling, solid performance through the whole of the match. I think that eclipsed any of the other matches that were happening on the show.
Yeah, without a doubt, the Royal Rumble itself. I've got to say, I'll probably have to give it to Austin, but I think Brett is a very close second.
Right,
and I thought a few of the good performances, people like Mankind, I thought in there. I thought Diesel did a decent job. But yeah, I thought there was a few people that worked well in there.
Yeah, I think that completes sort of a hat trick of a match of the night Royal Rumble match, and that's kind of half down to nothing else on the card was particularly good. And there was some decent star power in the Rumble overall, and there's an interesting story going forward from it. So I mean, you kind of look at it now and. Technically, the WrestleMania main event should be
Austin versus Sean.
But we've got a hell of a long way before we get there, and there's kind of lots of twists and turns. But it's certainly an intriguing prospect. MVP, Perro Aguayo, easily.
Yeah.
For that dive off the ropes. No, Steve Austin, if just for the face he made when Bret Hart came out. And the little things like the doing the press-ups and the looking at the imaginary watch. And, you know, I think probably my favourite all-time Royal Rumble performance is Punk in 2010.
Is that his straight edge one?
Yeah, where he's doing the, you know, touch the TV, feel the power of straight edge you know, that kind of stuff. So, and that was probably very much inspired by Austin's performance here, I would imagine.
Yeah. Mm.
So, yeah, bravo, Stone Cold. Yeah. Mullet of the night.
Pero Aguayo.
He did win something.
He was a winner in one respect. He had quite a... Especially for someone that's in their 50s. Good mullet. Really nice. Dude. He might have been aided by that, actually, by the fact that he's, like, receding at the front, so it reduces the amount going on there, but he still kept the back.
And on that bombshell, you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/NewGenerationProjectPodcast. We are also on Twitter
at the Royal Rumblin'
New Gen Podcast. You can, as ever, rate, review and subscribe for all of our episodes as soon as they are available on iTunes. If iTunes isn't your thing, you can check out new episodes on SoundCloud at soundcloud.com/newgenpodcast, on Stitcher Radio or on piledriverwrestling.net. Or if you've just found us and want to catch up, our back catalogue is going up one by one by one on botchamania.com. We got a new iTunes review the other day that described you as lewd and you as weird.
Yeah.
But me as nothing at all.
Lewd?
Lewd.
Not lewd.
Calling Spots issue 20 is available for pre-order at callingspots.com. This issue features a cover article on Lucha Underground that I've written. Hurrah. And as ever, the artwork for the front is bloody awesome.
Yeah.
Also inside are articles on Adam's favourite, Eva Marie.
I do like Eva Marie.
El Santo and Will Ospreay. That's all available for just $1.99 plus postage. Subscriptions are also available.
Who's written an article on Eva Marie? And is it entitled, Why Is She at That Position in the Card?
You'll have to buy it to find out.
I'll just borrow
it. Is it just all about her hair?
Her hair is amazing.
Amazing, yeah.
Absolutely amazing.
Adam's currently loving her double underpants top.
Yes.
As he describes it.
She's got a top that looks like two pair of underpants. One to cup each breasticle.
We watched the Women's Battle Royal from the main event of this week's NXT yesterday morning. Yeah. And it was like watching it with Beavis and her butthead as he just sat there going, butts. But. But.
Yeah, I'd recommend giving it a look.
Episode 55 will see us cover a show that many, many of you have requested we take a look at. It's the first ever NWO pay-per-view. It's sold out 1997.
Now, I'm upset about this because I've seen part of this when you were watching it and it looked like a big steaming pile of shit. So again, out to our audience, stop, please stop making us review horrible, horrible things.
Sorry.
I'm looking forward to it.
I'm not sure I am.
My name is Stuart Brooks. I will see you later.
Madam White's goodbye.
I'm Paul Scrivens. Goodbye.
No, at Yes Paul Scrivens today.
I'm at WrestleMaths. Paul Scrivens. Bye. No, I'm at Russell Maths, at Yes Paul Scrivens. Goodbye. Brother Bellet's in the back, sweet singers in the front, cruising down the freeway in the hot, hot sun. Suddenly red blue lights flash us from behind. Loud voice booming, please step out onto the line. Ballet bridge waves of comfort, Cena just hides her eyes. Policeman taps the shades and sells a Chevy 69. Dime bizarre! Dime bizarre! Dime bizarre! Destination unknown as we're pulling for some gas. Officially placed a poster reveals a smile from the back. Elephants and acrobats, lion, snakes, monkey. Bella speaks righteous, Sister Cena says funky. Dime bizarre! Dime bizarre! Dime bizarre! Ooh, baby. Elephants sit down. People jump and jive, and the clowns are stuck around. TV news and cameras, there's choppers in the sky. Marines, police, reporters ask where, for, and why. Bella yells, we're out of here. Cena says, right on. Making moves and starting grooves before they knew we were gone. Jumps into the Chevy, headed for big lights.
Wanna know the rest? Hey, by the rights.
Dime Bazaar! Dime Bazaar! Dime Bazaar!
By winning this night's Royal Rumble tonight, because I'm bizarre.